Steve, do us a favor, could you?
Well, I will.
Both Wendy and I are intrigued by one of your by several of your stories, but one in particular.
We're intrigued by you, actually.
You intrigue us.
The Ryan Lochte story?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. So, hypothetically, Ryan Lochte was robbed the other day. He and some fellow swimmers were robbed, but now, as you pointed out in the news, maybe not. What would be in it for him to lie about this?
I don't.
Attention, you guys. Come on.
Okay, but let's
just
be.
Got a lot of attention.
Right. Let's be very careful here because. And not to read too much into it. You know, they say that there was a robbery.
Yeah.
A Brazilian judge has ordered him, and I'm sorry, I don't know how, is it James Feigen, another Olympic swimmer, to have their passport seized, not leave the country as the investigation continues. Now, that could mean a couple of things. It could mean that they suspect the story, but it could also mean that they're key witnesses and the judge doesn't want them to leave until they can provide testimony or evidence against whoever's arrested, right? There's a couple ways to look at it. The things that police have said so far is that they have not found much evidence to support their claim. They can't find the taxi driver. They can't find witnesses or things like that.
Did they call the police when it happened? I was listening to Ro and Anna yesterday, and police were not called, which leads me to believe that they were doing something they shouldn't have been doing.
Like what? What would
hookers.
They have been doing? They
drinking.
Don't have hookers
well,
in
not
Rio
drinking.
De Janeiro.
It's legal there, isn't it?
Is it legal?
Yeah.
Is it an event? Is it an Olympic
event? Not yet. Boy, I could have won gold years ago. Now I'm too old.
All right, put that. Take that back right now.
But, you know, they didn't call police is what I heard when it happened. So that seems odd to me. If you were robbed.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Within seconds of knowing that the robbers weren't nearby.
So that's questionable to me.
But what I know you say for attention, but he just got a crazy amount of attention. Would you want, what would the attention give him?
You become attention hungry.
I don't know. So he would have to talk his other fellow teammates into saying,
right.
Let's pretend we were robbed.
Didn't they have different stories? That's what raised a lot of questions here.
I don't know.
They were unable to provide, again, these according to police sources, some sort of key facts of the narrative in their questioning, yes.
So it seems suspect to me.
I know in the past people have faked this sort of thing before, but it hasn't. I don't remember anybody this much in the spotlight. I mean, he's really been in the spotlight for the past week or 10 days. So why the blemish? Why would you want something negative thrown at you?
This story is just breaking now about the judge and all of that.
Yeah.
Lochte's already out of the country.
He is, isn't he? He's at home, right?
Right.
That's too late. I thought they had their passports seized.
He ordered them seized.
A little late. Timing is nothing in the Olympics.
Well, but everything happens within a hundredth of a second, Wendy. So you have to be as precise as you possibly can. You'll come in second place.
And I know that the IOC originally said, no, there was no robbery because they don't want people to think anything happened during the Olympics at Olympic Village. But yet an IOC executive has been arrested and charged with scalping tickets to the Olympics.
How about that?
So, boy. There's always some bad stuff going on.
Here's an interesting tweet. This is from Hope Solo. She says that they're cowards. Everybody in this is a coward. Wow.
You know, Hope Solo, too, over the weekend, it came out with this domestic abuse charges. She has not been charged.
But this is from a story that
happened
a long
time ago.
Yes, a long time ago. But it was interesting reading about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know what's happened. She
was not charged?
I thought she was not charged. And then the whole deal stemmed from Hope Solo arrived at her stepsister's house.
Yeah.
And allegedly had a bottle of wine in the cup holder in the car and was a little drunk.
Solo cup holder, by the way.
Very good.
I'm a professional. And then what happened?
Professional what?
I don't know.
And then she got into an argument with her nephew, who was 18 at the time, around that age. And the stepsister and her son, the stepsister and the nephew were trying to get Hope Solo out of their house, mm-hmm. and evidently the nephew hit her over the head with a mop handle, and there was a fight that ensued between all of them.
Wow.
Police were called, and she went on Good Morning America back when this happened and said, you know, well, my nephew instigated it all, so now the stepsister got mad and has reopened the case or something.
Yeah, no, she was charged. I mean, she was in court. I'm looking at a picture of her in court on two counts of domestic violence, so she was charged.
How about that?
She seems like an interesting gal.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. That is a very
fair
assessment.
What year was it, Steve? Because I really was intrigued by that backstory on
her. It's been a couple of years. 2011. Let me look here. 2014.
Because had she not been a jerk at the Olympics, I wouldn't have known about this stuff.
Well, oh, I did. I mean, it was widely reported, yeah.
It was widely reported. And there have been stories about her for years and years and years. There's a story when she first came up with the U.S. Olympic women's team, she was the backup goalie and didn't like that idea and made it clear that she was a far better goalie than the woman that was already in the goal.
I do remember that.
That was kind of a I mean, even if you feel that way, it's better tact to not really make it as public an issue as she did. But she really called them out and said, hey, I'm a better goalie. I should be in the goal and not her. So
listen, if you got things in your closet, don't make waves.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Just go about your business.
Yeah.
She doesn't make the Olympic team look very good. It's like a bad representative of being on the Olympics.
I wonder how that'll play out. I wonder. All right. We have all kinds of stuff on. Yes.
See, you're a little late with that, Kevin.
That makes it feel better somehow.
It soothes all wounds, doesn't it?
Yes. It's the Epsom salts of music. All right. We'll take a quick break. And
what
then,
do we got? And that then, is the worst.
I know. More Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We were talking about Ryan Lochte. I would like to talk about his white bleach blonde hair turning green from the green water.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah.
And that happens to blondes a lot anyway.
It's the chemicals
it's
in the chlorine that does
usually.
That? Yeah.
He was allegedly, there are reports that he was robbed at gunpoint.
Yes.
With a couple other teammates.
Yes.
He has left the country, and they've left it, I guess. We don't know if it really happened or not. I just find it very odd that when you're held up at gunpoint, you don't call the police right away.
That's the strangest part. Is because what would be the reason to not call the police within seconds? I would do it immediately. While I was being robbed, I'd say, could I just have my phone back for 1 second? You can take the phone, but I just need to make one quick phone call.
Oh, maybe that's why he didn't call, because his phone was taken.
They stole his phone, maybe. That would make sense. I don't know if that happened, but maybe.
I don't know either. And then authorities in Rio de Janeiro arrested an International Olympic Committee executive who was accused of scalping tickets for the Summer Games. According to the report, 71-year-old Patrick Hickey was arrested.
That's going to leave a mark.
I knew you had it in you.
I had to.
He was Irish, right?
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was arrested at a Rio hotel, became ill after his arrest, and taken to a hospital.
Oh,
that's a good cover-up.
I'm not
feeling good.
Could you please let me go? I'm feeling some discomfort.
I'm not feeling oh good.
Brazilian police say Hickey is formally charged with ticket touting.
Ticket touting?
Yes, forming a cartel and illicit marketing, which carries a maximum sentence of 7 years in jail.
Wow. Wow.
Wow,
that's
why do
so
you
crazy
do that?
That someone on the Olympic committee would do something below the board. It just doesn't
it
seem
does
like that.
It does surprise me. It does.
Does it?
I don't know. I trust everyone. That's my problem.
But these guys, the Olympic committee, have proven themselves to be just a little bit on the shady side.
I guess.
Just a little bit.
And, Steve, do we know anything about the attendance at the Olympics? Was it down in comparison to other games, other summer games? Because I know that they originally had reported that they were selling tickets, and they had a surplus of
tickets.
They?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not the Olympic expert, really.
Where's Ryan Burrow when you need him?
Yeah, he took the day off.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've noticed that, too. It seems like there often are empty, more empty seats than you'd expect at the Olympics, though.
Isn't that something?
There's a lot of events going on.
The Zika thing scared people, I think. Although my neighbor, who's like 22 or something, he had a garage sale to raise money to go to the Olympics. I said, are you in it? He said, no, I'm just going. But but I haven't heard from him. I wanted to know if he had any stories, so I don't know if he actually went. Because I didn't know anybody that would just pick up and leave here and go watch the Olympics.
My friend Scott, who you've met, we've had Scott on in the past. I play tennis with him. He's leaving for the Paralympics, which take place almost immediately after the regular Olympics. And he said initially he was a little bit apprehensive about going, but from colleagues of his who have been there, they say the experience has been pretty pleasant so far.
But he's competing. For someone to just go as a spectator with no family member in it, that seems weird.
He's not competing. He represents some of the athletes. He's not actually competing.
Okay. Bill and I were questioning why Ryan Lochte did not call the police, and someone has texted, what's the phone number in Rio for the police?
Oh, right.
Isn't it 911 universally?
No, I don't think it is.
Boy, I hope nothing happens to me overseas because I wouldn't know who to call.
I kept dialing 911. Nobody came. I don't think 911 is a global phone number.
No,
but I doubt it.
I mean, if he was in a taxi that was robbed at gunpoint,
right?
You'd think the taxi also would call. Now, the other side of it is, if I would bolt, I'd get out of there too.
Yeah.
Right? If the bad
Usain
guys,
Bolt.
Right, I would Usain Bolt. I would drive faster than Usain Bolt to get away from the scene and then maybe call police.
Oh, yeah, but right.
You'd assume there'd be a cab driver involved in the call, and he probably knows the number.
I'm a little shocked, Steve, that Aquaman did not come to his rescue. This is his jurisdiction.
If you want the federal police, the Policia Federal in Brazil, you dial 194.
Well, that's handy.
If you want the ambulance,
hold on.
Ambulancia.
Ambulance.
It's 192.
192.
Corpo de Bombieros.
Yes.
Fire service.
What is that?
193.
193. If you want German police, 19999. You wouldn't think they have any jurisdiction at all in Rio, but they do.
I'm a dummy.
No.
I thought it was 911. I don't travel much.
They're close. I mean.
No, they're not.
Well, they got a 9 and a 1 in it.
That's a little tip that
they're
we can do.
They're both on the keyboard.
Good point.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Here's what we should do, and you know, with Steve Bertrand travel and all that, before you leave, Steve, you should look up the emergency numbers for all the countries
That's
you're going
policy.
To and provide it with your travelers.
Thank you. How do you know I don't do that?
I bet Steve does do that.
Everyone gets a little packet of information with emergency numbers to call.
I would be shocked if Steve did that.
Oh, it's all very thorough and on the up and up.
You know how they say if you're
good.
Now, they always say if you're getting attacked, don't yell I'm being robbed or anything. Yell fire, that more people will pay attention. I'm surprised Ryan Lochte didn't yell water.
Who's going to help you when you yell water? Michael Phelps, maybe.
Michael Phelps.
Mosquito.
Michael Phelps to the rescue.
Right. Zika. Just yell.
Mosquito.
Right. Yell what plays on their fears the most. Know your territory and go, oh, there's a lot of mosquito fear here in the area. Mosquito. Just keep yelling mosquito until people help
or,
you.
Or like Steve Martin said back in the 70s, throw up on your money.
Do that.
Who said that?
Steve Martin. How to never get robbed in New York City. Right. When a robber comes up to you, take out your wallet and throw up on your money.
And if you yell Zika, then Hope Solo's going to come.
Right.
Because that's the chant people were saying.
Right.
There are all these code words. They are like superheroes. They really are. Why isn't somebody doing a sketch with them being superheroes?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Phelps is Aquaman, obviously.
He'd be Aquaman.
Huh, interesting. Yes. All right, we have to take a break because we have to get into the news, because right after the news, we're going to be talking to Peter Tork of the Monkees. They're having their 50th anniversary. They're performing, and they have a new record out featuring, I believe, Davy Jones.
Oh, they've taken old tracks, yes. Obviously, prior to his death and incorporated them. I'm going to say, I'll say this when Peter Tork is here, but I'm not just saying this because he's going to be our guest. I'm a huge fan of their work. Are you as well?
Oh, totally.
I love them. I think they're so good. And really, I mean, it's a story that we'll tell with him. They didn't have to be as good as they are, but they are.
Absolutely.
They were, and they still are.
And the funny thing is, I had asked you off the air, you know, who was your favorite Beatle?
Yeah.
And then you said, wait, we're talking to Peter Tork. I said, who is your favorite monkey? And you said, Peter Tork.
Yeah.
It was mine, too, because I thought he was really cute with the hair. And then my son, Michael, who's 17, said Peter was his favorite, too.
Right.
So now we have to ask Bertrand.
Steve?
Yeah, I'd go with Peter Tork.
Peter Tork. He
seemed to be the one most with it. Well, Michael Nesmith was the most with it, right? But I don't know.
Two of them, I mean, when he's here, we'll mention this, but two of them were accomplished musicians. Peter Torek and Mike Nesmith had a big musical background. Davy Jones and Mickey Dolenz were actors, so they wanted that mixture. But their goal was to just have them up there just kind of pretending to be a band, and then it turned out that they became a great band.
Unlike the Partridge Family.
Yeah.
Hey.
Danny Bonaducci.
Hey.
Who's your favorite Chris?
Yeah, right.
The first one.
First Chris, Jeremy Gelbwax.
Yeah.
No, that was Danny.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
No, there was a blonde. There's a blonde and a dark-haired.
Dark-haired Chris is Jeremy Gelbwax. Blonde Chris was Brian Foster.
You scare me. Are you wearing someone else's pants?
Right.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
He do you have an update on that, by the way?
I can't talk. It's crazy.
No, what?
Oh, you got it.
I didn't have time. I didn't have time to go to the dry cleaners, but even my wife said when I came home, she goes, you know those are not your pants. And I go, I know they're not my pants.
And I, again, I am not grouping all men together, but, you know, women are very detail-oriented.
Right.
I was trying on sunglasses. I said to Jim, which ones do you like better? He goes, they look the same to me, and they were completely different colors. You go through half the day wearing someone else's pants, not even realizing that. A woman would have known it in one
Within
second.
Within a second, I think you're right.
Even before we tried them on, we'd hold them up and go, these aren't ours.
She said to me when I walked in, and she wasn't listening to the show, she's just looking at me, and she goes, where'd you get those? And I go, oh, we were talking about it on the show. I don't think these are mine. And she goes, they're not yours. Look at they're totally different.
Maybe they're Mully or Hanley's that she was listening to.
Right. Yeah.
So what if some guy was about to get engaged and he left the ring in his Bermuda shorts?
Then you know what? I wouldn't marry the guy because if you saw the ring, it was a little diamond chip.
You know that phrase, he puts his pants on just like you're not so much for Bill.
No, totally different for me. A break and then more show. And then one of our favorite monkeys, Peter Torek. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Here we come. Walk down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet. Hey, hey, we're the monkeys. And people say we're
a bit of a problem, Bill.
Well, yeah, there is a little bit of a problem, but it's correctable. We can fix this.
Well, there's been a scheduling conflict, so Peter Torek will be on with us at 11:30 this morning. But so as not to disappoint you, how about some monkey news?
I would love some monkey news. By the way, whenever I hear that theme song, I think about the opening credits, of course, to the Monkees television show. And I like the part where all the boys ran into the water and then ran out of the water and then ran back into the water and then ran back out of the water. I used to enjoy that a lot.
I got to tell you, that is one of the funniest shows on TV. And I thought maybe it's because I was so much younger when I watched it.
Yeah.
But it still makes me giggle when I find videos of them just being silly.
The part that I loved the most is they had their own swinging monkey bachelor pad, remember?
Yeah.
Because they were in a band, so you'd get your swinging bachelor pad. And sometimes they would ride the motorcycle inside the house.
I know.
And to me, I went, that'd be fun to be in a band and have a motorcycle and ride it in your house. That'd be fun. And then run into the water and then run out of the water and then in and then back out. And sometimes they were wearing like chic hats.
I know.
In the desert.
And capes.
Yeah. That was a fun time.
All right, well, here is the monkey news, because we promised you monkey news. We promised you a monkey.
We promised you a monkey.
And you know what? We'll deliver.
We have a monkey coming.
A live report going on right now. Actually, it's not right now, but let's just pretend.
Okay.
We go live. Oh, crap. Where is it? Hang on. Stand by.
All right.
We are going to Lancaster, Ohio right now. And tune in.
Rochelle Stewart just moved to Lancaster and came to this Walmart to buy some paint. She never expected to see a monkey.
Is that a monkey?
A bizarre video of a monkey attack at this Walmart in Lancaster has been shared over 3,000 times and seen by over 150,000 people on Facebook.
Whose monkey is that?
It happened Sunday night. Stewart says her and her husband were arriving at the Walmart when she spotted a monkey attacking an employee.
I saw the monkey and he was just like standing on the carts, and this lady was trying to come over and to try to get him. And then we saw the cart guy from Walmart kind of coming over to help her.
Don't pull on him. Don't pull
on
him.
Oh no.
Let him go. Let him go. Let him go.
All of a sudden the monkey jumps on him, and then she runs over and pushes the guy away.
A spokesperson from Walmart tells NBC4 the employee was not bitten. The retailer says the employee grabbed the monkey's leash to return the animal to the owner, who was, quote, grateful.
When we posted it on Facebook, we just did it for fun. Like, we go to Walmart, we just moved to Lancaster, and there's a monkey.
All right. You have to see the video, and we can post it on our Facebook page.
Crazy.
There's a monkey in a diaper,
yeah.
Which typically they're in a diaper when owned by someone. And the owner is a woman who is grabbing this monkey by the hand, kind of like it's a toddler acting
like,
badly.
Don't do this to me. Jeremy, we talked about this.
Jeremy the monkey?
Jeremy the monkey. Don't you get the feeling it's like we discussed this all the way from Reading. I said to you, I'll take you to Walmart, but you have to behave. And now this. Are you getting any of that vibe from that?
A little bit. And then the cart guy, I didn't know there was such a job at, I guess.
Cart wrangler.
Okay.
Yeah.
He tried to.
Jeremy, I know you're upset, but the circus peanuts aren't real peanuts.
Right. It's candy shaped like peanuts.
It's just bizarre. You've got to see this video.
Can I tell you, in all the times I've been to a Walmart, if I saw a monkey, he'd be like the eighth weirdest guy I saw in the Walmart. He'd make the top 10 for sure. There's no doubt about it. If I saw a monkey, I'd go, oh, that's crazy. But then, like, throughout the trip, he might make the top 10. Might.
All right. Who brings their monkey to Walmart? Who has a monkey? I guess I know
Guilty.
People that have monkeys.
Steve has brought his monkey to Walmart more than once.
I bring my monkey everywhere.
Do you want to touch my monkey? And then wasn't there another
monkeys like to save money too, Wendy. It's not just a human right. trait. Monkeys love a good value.
They like the smiley face.
A good greet when they walk
sure.
in the door.
Sure.
All right, well, this sure. is like a chimpanzee, and it is making noise, and they've been known to be pretty mean.
Oh, they can go nuts.
And they are wild animals, so even...
what's the term they can go...
They can ape something.
Ape excrement.
That's just not just a phrase. That's real.
But then in the news...
Earned.
Yep.
Earlier this week, there was a helper monkey. Not a helper monkey.
A cherry helper monkey.
Yes. Yes.
What is it called? It is...
That's the kind of monkey I'm going to get, by the way.
I know. That's why I'm getting confused.
I want a helper monkey.
This is the emotional support animal.
Like a service monkey.
Yes.
Oh, a service monkey.
I find this odd. That you would have a service monkey. A service dog will calm your nerves,
right.
And it's really good. But this was on a Frontier Airlines flight from Ohio to Las Vegas.
Did it stop at Walmart? Because as we just learned, Wendy, monkeys love Walmart. Did it get a Priceline deal? All right, there's one stop on the whole flight. You got to stop at Walmart. We're in. Jeremy? Yeah? We're in.
This is a 4-year-old marmoset, so this is a smaller type of monkey. And there was a guy going through the security checkpoint in Columbus, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
With no shoes on, and he was wearing shorts, and his monkey Gizmo was on his shoulder. So how did he get through security?
Wait, get to the weird part.
There's no way Peter Twerk is calling it.
No, not anymore.
Hey, we promised a monkey. We've got monkeys in the news, two of them, actually.
But TSA, like, they go, yeah, all right. Gizmo, you're in. Let me see your papers.
Well,
you're in.
According to news outlets, Jason Ellis, the guy,
yeah,
owner of Gizmo.
Yeah, Gizmo Ellis. That's not just a dog thing. If you have a monkey, you give the monkey your last name. It's familial.
Do you do that?
Yeah.
I never called him Tiki
Mac. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Ellis neglected to let the airline know that Gizmo would be joining him on the flight as a registered emotional support animal.
Oh.
A flight attendant saw Gizmo peeking out of Ellis's shirt during the flight. Oh, my God. That would freak me out. You're just sitting on the flight waiting for the drinks to be served, and it's like, did I just see a monkey peeking out of that guy's shirt?
Sir, your son is curious looking. I'm not saying ugly. I'm just saying.
Well, Curious George, I thought you were going.
Sure. Ma'am, someone just grabbed my peanuts.
Good God, Bertrand, you're losing all credibility. But we love you for that. A flight attendant saw Gizmo peeking out of Ellis's shirt during the flight and asked for proof to confirm that the animal was a service animal, but Ellis couldn't access his paperwork on board.
Oh.
So when the plane landed in Las Vegas, police were called after reports that the monkey was loose during the flight.
Yep.
But an airline spokesman later confirmed that the monkey was never actually loose in the cabin. He was always with the passenger it was traveling with and was indeed a certified service animal.
Oh, nice.
It's a little tiny marmoset, and I believe the difference between a monkey and an ape is a monkey has a tail.
Is that true?
Yeah. I worked at Brookfield Zoo for several years, and
right.
I really think that's the difference.
All right.
Because an ape, gorillas do not have tails.
Right.
Right. But this marmoset does. Jason Ellis later told KSNV News in Nevada that this was actually the third time he'd flown with Gizmo in the cabin.
Oh.
But that this time he didn't have time to alert the crew that his monkey was flying as an emotional support animal.
Oh,
How do you get approved?
You make time for that.
Dylan has two tortoises. Can I get them registered to be an emotional support tortoise? Why? Why not that?
I don't know.
Why a monkey? Why not a turtle? Why not a duck?
I don't know the answers to any of those questions.
All right, we have to take a break, and I would like to know how to qualify your pets as a service animal. I know dogs go through a lot of training.
Right.
They're very helpful for post-traumatic stress
yes.
disorder for people. I mean, it's amazing
but
what they can do.
But a monkey would add more stress,
That's
I
what I'm
think.
Thinking.
I would imagine.
And now, Karen, if you can hold on, we'll talk to Karen after the break. There's another service animal that I think you should know about and be scared of.
Excellent. That's coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Monkeys on a plane. How did it happen? Jason Ellis, barefoot and in shorts, going through a security checkpoint in Columbus, Ohio, had his monkey Gizmo on his shoulder. We just watched the video.
Yeah.
How does TSA let you through with a monkey on your shoulder?
They seem very complacent. They don't seem like...
He's kind of like... It's a tiny little marmoset, first of all.
Right.
It's about the size of a squirrel, kind of.
Yeah.
So he's kind of moving it around on his shoulder, and it's walking around on his shoulder. He's kind of showing it off to the TSA agents, and they're like, well, look at that. But then they let him through.
They're not even weird to the fact that he doesn't have shoes. Like, he just comes through there without shoes on.
Well, you have to take your shoes off.
Well, he didn't have shoes, so they should make him put a pair of shoes on just to balance things out.
I'm glad you're not in charge of anything.
Nobody called him out on that. Or the monkey. Like, one of those should have been a red flag that there was trouble ahead.
All right. Well, it's really weird how he got through TSA, and then police arrived in Vegas when he landed. And what do you go to Vegas for with a monkey?
Don't you want some shows? Well, I mean, some gambling, but monkeys, they love Blue Man Group. They could see that.
All right. We told Karen to hang on. Karen, service animal. There can be a service monkey, obviously a service dog. I would like my son's tortoises to be service tortoises. What do you know about?
Well, my local high school principal has a service pig. He moved into our community about 4 or 5 years ago, and he moved into the subdivision that has all the ritzy houses, the $300,000 and the $400,000 homes.
Yeah.
And he moved in with this pig. And there are people who have taken pictures and videos of him lolling around in the backyard with the pig like it was a dog and playing catch and blah, 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 blah. So the HOA kept trying to kick the pig out.
Yeah.
Because it's residential, it's not a farm. And finally, last year, he submitted a letter to the HOA from a doctor that's certifying this pig as a service pig.
What does the pig do, though, that would qualify it as a service pig?
Have no idea.
Hmm.
He doesn't have to wear the same, like, identification that service dogs have to wear.
It's like a little cloth thing belted on them that says service animal, usually.
Right.
You could make
right.
your own very easily. I'm pretty crafty and can print well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It's just the weirdest thing and a major bone of contention, ham bone of contention.
Oh, I like what you did there.
And the community.
I wish I had
but
some bacon to give you.
He thinks it's a dog.
They do have those little pot-bellied pigs that are really adorable. I've seen them in numerous locations, and you can adopt them as a pet, but they grow into big pot-bellied pigs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they get really big.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Very interesting. Thank you, Karen, for that.
I'm trying to.
I want a pig.
Help me with the difference between a helper animal and a service animal. Is a service animal more for emotional needs than a helper animal? I don't know the answer to that.
Maybe Maureen knows the answer to that. Did you hear Bill's question? Hi, Maureen.
I did hear his question. I don't know the answer to his question, but I do know a friend of mine has a little dog that is, she calls her support dog when she travels, and she signed up online to get this dog identified as a support dog, and she knows a doctor who signed the paper so she could travel with her dog as a support dog, not a service dog, but an emotional support dog. So she and her family is in Europe, so she frequently flies to Europe with this animal, with her little dog that she calls a support dog.
I'm going to do that for Tiki, and he's really big, so he would just sit on the seat right next to me, and then Bill would be across the aisle going nuts. Maureen, thank you for your story, and we might know the difference, and I guess I am using them incorrectly. Mark, there is a difference. A service animal is like a leader dog for the blind or something
That's
like that.
That's a service dog.
Yeah, correct. You can go online. There's a website where you can register any animal you want as an emotional support animal to take it on a flight. My son's a Delta pilot, and there was a turkey somebody registered, turkey got its own seat.
All right. This is ridiculous.
So you can register the tortoises and then take them with you.
All right, I'm doing that. But it just
it's
seems
only like it's $150.
Mark, you crack me up because there's a site online. You know what? There was somewhere I could mail away to get a fake ID back in the day too, and
right.
It wasn't legal. It's just who's in charge of deeming them support animals?
Wendy,
a turkey?
You know Reginald, my support caribou. I travel everywhere with him. You've seen him.
He doesn't
That's
fit
exactly
on the plane.
Right.
No.
Emotional support and service are two different things.
I would think, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for clearing that up. I am going to bring Tiki and the Tortoises.
Sure.
That's the name of my new band, by the way. We're
going to
start traveling. I'm going to teach them how to sing.
That's going to be great.
God.
All right. A break. Don't worry. This isn't all the monkey content you'll have today. The real monkey, Peter Turek, will be coming by. You can fly with him on a plane. There's no problem there.
And you don't have to get approved any special documents for that.
No, it's easy. All right. News is next, and then more show coming your way. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder with you on WGN. We're at 312-981-7200 if you'd like to call in or text in. Every other Wednesday, Dane Neal stops by. You know Dane from Access Appetite and from his fill-in work here at WGN and as a frequent guest on our show. Hi, Dane. How are you?
It is good to be
nice
here. Good
to
see
you
guys. And your pants, they look just like your pants.
Well, they're not my pants, Dane, and it's not something I'm comfortable
Whose pants
talking
are
about.
They?
We don't know. I know we don't know. You have brought royalty with you.
I have. In studio, and just honored to have her. She is, of course, she's Chicago's breakfast queen, Heavenly Hots. She brings the Heavenly Hots to people. She was the...
Oh, I thought that's what you were calling me.
That was her dancer name back,
right,
in,
for years.
Back in the day.
Many
of course,
years.
The visionary behind Ina's, the beloved breakfast spot, the star of Breakfast at Ina's, the movie, author of Taste Memories, Recipes for Life and Breakfast, the one and only Ina Pinkney.
Good morning.
So nice to meet you.
It's an
finally.
Honor to
I want
meet
you to
you.
Know I even put on the high-definition TV makeup for you today.
Thank you for that.
You never know.
Right. There could be a camera somewhere. Let's talk about that title for a second, The Breakfast Queen. That's with good reason. You're just that good. Do you feel honored when you hear that phrase?
I do, considering I made it up.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
Self-proclaimed.
Self-proclaimed. When I started making breakfast, which was in 1991, there was nothing like ours. There was no high-end fine dining breakfast restaurant. And somebody said, so what do you think you should be called? And I went, well, the Breakfast Queen.
Sure.
And it stuck. Lucky me.
Well, you think in just really what was a short period of time that so many of us can remember, you know, Chicago has become this, you know, globally renowned food town. And then, you know, one of the it's the most important meal of the day, but one of those meals that's often thought of just kind of a pedestrian necessity, right? You got to eat when you wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And Ina was the one who kind of brought it into the forefront. So Ina, what do you think as far as like Chicago, what about this passion for breakfast? Because people just absolutely love it now.
Well, here's the thing. You say to people, what's your favorite meal? They go, oh, I love breakfast. And what do they eat at home? Practically nothing. They only go to get a bagel and coffee. But when they go out to eat, and for years they accepted very mediocre food. Why? Because it all came to the table together at the same time. You're making someone breakfast at home. You go get the coffee. Then you sit down. Someone wants a toast. You want to make your eggs your way. Do you want this? Nobody ever sits together. So for years, there was a lot of mediocre food. And just because someone's in the kitchen cracking, you know, cracking eggs for you because they're there prepping for lunch doesn't mean they know how to cook eggs, doesn't mean they know how to handle the batter or make the grits just right. Mm-hmm. So it took a long time. And when I got the column here at the Tribune, mm-hmm. Breakfast with Ina, which is now in its second year, I can't believe it, I had to go to 31 restaurants to find 18 I could actually write about because the food was so bad.
Yeah, that's
but
terrible.
But now, in the last couple of years, things have changed dramatically because the high-end chefs mm-hmm. who hated the hours and working all around the clock decided to open their own places that serve just breakfast and lunch and once in a while dinner. So they've brought their knowledge of ingredients, they've brought their palates with them, and they brought these new techniques, and they're opening up breakfast and lunch restaurants. So I got it real easy now, everybody.
Yeah, I bet.
Real easy.
There's nothing like going out to breakfast. I got to tell you, I make really kick-ass omelets. I'll tell you that right now. But you're right. Everybody eats at different times. The hash browns are never ready at the same time.
See, you knew that.
Maybe it's the virtue of the name. It's got the word fast in it. It's break fast. It just makes you seem like we got to hurry up and get this thing done quick.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When you order something from Amazon Prime, it takes 2 days. You order a plate from me, it better take 18 minutes.
That's the deal.
Because that's the deal. 18-minute ticket time is ideal.
Right.
And, you know, you want it. Even if it's fried chicken and waffles, you want it there.
Yep.
So my job was to figure out, how do I get you this perfect plate of food in 18 minutes?
True.
So and what do you do when someone has a cell phone in Ina's?
Oh, we didn't allow that mm-hmm. from the very beginning.
Don't you love that, Bill?
I want to hug you.
I knew that would make you happy.
So the first, we opened up on Webster and Bissell in 1991, and three men came in suits carrying phones that were as big as a shoe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they started talking because there were no towers, and they were yelling. And I looked over the counter, and I went, oh, my God, this is the future, and it's ugly.
Yeah.
And I stopped it right then and there, and people were really angry because they felt entitled. They had a phone. Hardly anybody else did, and they did not want to be left out. So the best story I tell is when former Governor Blagojevich came in on his phone. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry, Governor, I can't seat you till you're off the phone. And he looked at me and thought I was kidding.
He laughed, probably like, oh, that's
cute. He tried to get around me, but I boxed him out. And I said, wow. No, Governor, I will not seat you until you're off the phone. And finally, he clicked his old flip phone, put it in his pocket, and he goes, really? And I said, really? And as I walk him to the table, all my customers applauded.
Oh, good.
Because the rule is the rule.
Yeah.
Well, one day the FBI will release all the wiretap phone, and you will hear him say, I have to get off the phone, I'm at Ina's.
Oh, that is so funny. You should have had him put a hairnet on, too, because while he was walking by, his hair would have fallen on somebody else's breakfast.
People have enjoyed for so many years you at Ina's now in all these different forms, whether it's the books, whether it's the movies, whether it's the column with the Tribune. Mm-hmm. And now people are going to enjoy you, your information, your direction, your inspiration as you're joining another beloved food personality, Hot Doug, Doug Sohn. You guys are doing a talk.
We are. Can you imagine the two of us together? It's heaven.
It's going to be fun.
So we call it post-traumatic restaurant disorder. Because we both have the same feelings about going out to eat when we see a busser who should be doing something else, walking around just topping off your water constantly mm-hmm. because they don't want to look like they're not busy. Mm-hmm. And then we put their fingers in the glasses. I mean, there's so many things that we see that we just don't like. And so he and I are going to be speaking at Cliff Dwellers on the 24th, and it's usually a private club.
Yeah.
But you can make reservations and come and have breakfast for dinner. My food will be on the buffet, and then Doug and I sit and talk to each other. We don't have a moderator. I put a lot of topics in a basket,
yeah.
And we just pick one out, and then we ask each other questions, or we talk about the things that are on that. And so I may say to him, who was the worst vendor you ever had? You know, or who cooked for you when you were six?
Yeah.
So we have this delicious conversation, and he is a riot.
He's a great guy.
He is.
You should call it Someone's in the Kitchen with Ina.
And I know people can experience all the things that you're doing in so many different places, but people want to catch up with you on social media or maybe get out to one of these talks. Give ways people can catch up with all your adventures.
You can sign up for my newsletter, which always has everything, and that's at breakfastqueen.com.
All right.
Breakfastqueen.com. And I put out a newsletter like I've been doing for 23 years on the first of every month, and it's kind of a fun thing to do. I am at Twitter at breakfastqueen1. I'm a big Twitter girl.
I'm following you right now.
Thank you. I do like Twitter a lot.
I do too.
Facebook, I'm right there at Facebook telling mm-hmm. people where I'm going. The movie, the documentary that was made about the closing of my restaurant is in film festivals all over the country. And the next one I go to is in Chagrin Falls, Ohio. So that's going to be fun to go to that one also.
So nice to finally meet you. We've heard your story for years and years and years, and you're even better in person. So thanks, Anna.
Thank you.
Great to see you.
Continued success.
A quick break and then more talk of food with Dane Neal. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Which is sponsored by Resurrection University, by the way.
All right, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dane Neal is still in studio, continuing with his line of the legends
line
of Foodland.
Of
right. The food and the questions will continue. Tell us who is now in studio, Dane.
Well, we went from breakfast legend Ina Pinkney to really one of Chicago's, and I think maybe the world's, you know, one of the greatest and most revered chefs that we've had either in this city or any other, and brought so much acclaim to Chicago from all over for many years. When you talked about food and you talked about Chicago, wherever you would go, Charlie Trotter's name
sure.
would come up. And since his passing, his friends, family, colleagues have carried on with the Trotter Project. And so we have Ann Trotter. She
Hi,
is
Ann.
Here as
Good
well
morning.
As well as Chef Bill Kim from Urban Belly. And of course, he was the sous chef and the chef de cuisine over at Trotter's as well. And this is exciting. It's exciting stuff because, you know, number one, we lost Charlie way too soon.
Yep.
Obviously.
Absolutely.
But it's just amazing to see all of these colleagues and notables in the food world kind of rally around, kind of carrying on his message.
Good. Nice to meet both of you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Really
our,
appreciate
our
it.
Pleasure.
Yeah. Let's talk about him for just a little bit. One of those guys who was a game changer when it came to food. You knew him your whole life. What was it like to be that close to him for so long?
Well, he was a very, very active brother, sibling. He was the oldest child of four and very busy kid. And in high school, he wound up getting into gymnastics, which helped him to really learn a very disciplinary nature of
yeah.
perfecting tumbling and trampoline, where he would compete on that and was very disciplined in that. He had to practice over and over these routines and learn excellence. And then went on to college and University of Wisconsin-Madison, where he was learning to cook a little bit because he lived in a house where he didn't have access to dorm food initially.
And all guys, no one's going to cook. He had to, you know, he drew the short stick.
Yes. Well, he and a roommate would have a competition, of course. It got to be competitive, and they would try to outdo one another and became very interested in cooking and got a love of cooking and also got a job as a waiter in a restaurant. And that combination sparked something. So he abandoned his political science aspirations. That was his degree at that school and went on to learn about cooking and
yeah.
Worked in some restaurants and studied across the world to dine in famous places and learn about cooking.
Well, Bill, you mentioned a game changer, and really, you know, one of those guys that did things that hadn't been done or done in that way
sure.
before. And Chef Kim, you know, you're a big part of the Trotter Project and being involved with it. But talk about it, because I know that there were chefs coming up that were trying to find ways to work with and around Charlie Trotter. And of course, you did.
Yeah. You know, he really jump-started my career. He is my culinary father, really gave me the path to lead me to what he called excellence, and super, super detail oriented and work with the best products from all over the country. You want to talk about farm to table? Almost 25 years ago, we were doing it.
Yeah.
We were getting venison from New York. We were getting fish from Japan. We would never buy any fish from the Midwest. We would get it from the East Coast, West Coast. I had, back in the day, I would have a cordless phone, too,
mm-hmm.
in my back pocket. And these were vendors, foragers, people calling us and say, we have porcini mushrooms in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have morels in the Midwest. And we would have cod in the East Coast. So
It's like organ transplants. You have to be at the ready when you get that phone call to go pick it up.
Exactly.
It's crazy what you mentioned, because the Trotter helicopter, of course, flying in and stuff.
Sure. So the choreography of it all was what you described, but the trade-off was people, customers, diners were getting a taste sensation they were not accustomed to.
The best of the best.
Yeah.
And such a pioneer. I mean, Charlie Trotter, such a pioneer, and leading the way for everybody else to think it's really cool and rock star-like to be a chef.
Well, and he really was a launching pad in his restaurant. His restaurant was in business for 25 years, and the amount of people that came out of there and have started their own things, whether it was in the restaurant industry, which mainly it was, but elsewhere, and gone beyond and taken that excellence with them.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Trotter Project, you know, what it does, how it kind of furthers some of the things that he was passionate about. And then, Bill, we want to talk about maybe some of the chefs that are involved in the events that people can participate in over the next week or so.
Well, the Trotter Project formed after Charlie passed away. The family was approached by a group of culinary individuals saying, how can we continue this legacy? We heard time and time again, our family, I would not be where I am today if it weren't for Charlie. And so we got together and formed the Trotter Project, which seeks to unite individuals interested in the culinary fields, service, and hospitality, and inspire young talent. And so we're continuing. Charlie did quite a bit of help and inspiration to young kids. We're continuing that and inspiring the young minds through mentorships, internships, and connections with people in the culinary field.
And an event is coming up that we need to know about, or no?
Today is the 29th anniversary of Charlie's restaurant opening to this day. And we're also launching Charlie Trotter Day today, which is a way for the culinary world to embrace his spirit and, mm-hmm. and love for food. And many restaurants across the United States are involved in preparing dishes, menu items that will, sales of those will proceeds will go to us.
And share some of the other notable chefs that are involved just really quickly, and then, of course, the website where people can get involved and find out more.
Yeah, sure. In California, Thomas Keller French Laundry. In New York, Per Se, which is his other restaurant. In Chicago, there's many, many. Bellina, GT Fish and Oysters, Yusho, our restaurant, Belly Cube. So these are alumni or chef colleagues that really lay the path for them to be able to work with kids who are needing mentorship and being able to create and become chefs someday and work as a hospitality member in our field.
And the website, so people can get more information, get involved, support, and find out everything that's going on.
Yes, it's www.trotterproject.org, and please check it out. And you'll also see United Airlines, who's our airline partner, who's been very, very supportive and are donating through their Bistro On Board sales $1 for every meal sold. So this will be very exciting for us, first time to have them.
That's great.
What a way to keep his legacy going strong.
Absolutely.
Great job.
And great to meet you. Bill, great to meet you. Thank you both for being here. Really appreciate it. And Dana is always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right. We'll take a quick break and then find out what's in the news next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Peter Tork has been and always will be a part of one of the most influential music groups of all time. Of course, I'm talking about the Monkees, now celebrating 50 years of business together. Peter joins us on the phone right now. Peter, it is an honor to meet you, sir.
Bill, it's a pleasure. Thanks. How are you doing?
We're both Wendy and I are fantastic.
And Wendy, Wendy, you there? Wendy,
I am here. Wendy? I am so here, talking to one of my heartthrobs. I know Davy Jones got a lot of the credit, and a lot of the girls were crazy for Davy, but
crazy for Davy too.
You were my guy, Peter.
That a girl. Thank you so much. Yeah, no, I was nuts about Davy Jones. I was all ready to have his baby.
That would have made headlines.
He was such a sweet guy, wasn't he?
He had his moments. The thing about Davy is that nobody, least of all Davy, really knew what he had, how gifted he was. You know, he grew up in a very, very, I don't want to say impoverished, but it was pretty bare bones, skin of the teeth kind of a living situation in England. And he didn't have the luxuries that the rest of us had, where there was time and room for us to say, hey, I might be pretty good at this, you know. It's just that he was cute and funny, and it turns out that he was talented to an extent that nobody really understood. He was so cool. He really is my favorite monkey.
But, but Peter, you could say what you just described about Davy Jones, you could say about the band themselves, is that you guys were kind of thrown together. Television was looking for an answer to the Beatles, and they threw you guys together, and then you just turned out being so good together.
We were very lucky that way. The secret was that the producers of the show, Bert Schneider and Bob Rafelson, for all of their egos, were able to bring an egoless eye, ego-free eye, to the casting process. And they didn't care that, and they knew we were going to be trouble. We were trouble. We had minds of our own. We were naive. We didn't know how the system worked, but that was exactly what they wanted. And they bought us packed the whole package, you know, talent and trouble both. And we were very lucky to survive, really. You know, this kind of thing, it's touch and go every time you turn around. You never know whether something like this is going to work, and if it does, whether it's going to last, and if it does, whether it's going to be of any value to anybody else.
Sure.
So
you mentioned Bert Schneider, and is it really true that Peter Fonda came up to you and said, I know it's monkey's money that actually paid for Easy Rider?
It is. It is true. Peter came. I hadn't thought about it, but I could see how true it was. Certainly, Bert and Bob, you know, got a substantial. You know, the producer gets the lion's share of whatever goes on, of course, if there's anything to be had, and they banked their money, and Bert put it all behind Easy Rider, and which just goes to show the kind of vision the man had. That he actually, you know, who would have thought if you know, a bunch of bikers on a road trip and this happens and that happens, and you got to go, this can't be a decent, this can't be a very good movie. And it was game changing. And all of the movies that came after it, you know, outlaw movies, outlaw gang movies, anti-hero movies, you know, it's just, it practically remade Hollywood.
Peter, let's look at the makeup of the Monkees. They had two guys, yourself and Mike Nesmith, who were classically trained musicians. They had two guys that were actors, Mickey and Davy. Was that on purpose, that mixture?
Not exactly. Well, I don't know what else could have done, but really what happened was that they saw the four of us, and I know certainly that Bert and Bob were hoping that we could do concert shows of our own as well. So if they got a couple of guys who could act, but who also had some music, and a couple of guys who were musicians who could also act, they thought they had the combination they wanted. Really have to hand it to them. I mean, who would have thought? You know, Bert said to me years and years later, it was lightning in a bottle. He had no way of knowing what he was going to get. But, and Mike had, I don't know that Mike had ever acted before, you know, But he'd always been ambitious to be in showbiz, and so had I, and I had acted. I was, in fact, I was the player king in Hamlet. In
college.
Wow!
Not bad.
Anon he finds him striking too short at Greeks. His antique sword rebellious to his arm lies where it falls, repugnant to command.
Was that your audition piece for the Monkees?
No, it wasn't. My audition piece for the Monkees was, see that line expected children simultaneously. The doctor bothers anyone. See that we'll be three forever. And you would like that.
Wow.
You know, it's so funny. My son Michael is 17 years old. He's a musician, and he was trying to school me on Monkees information this morning. I said, really, Michael? I know enough about the Monkees. And he's like, Peter plays a mean banjo. Are you still playing the banjo?
I surely am. Come to a show. Come to the show.
We are coming to the show. I have to go see you. The three remaining members of the Monkees, Peter Tork, Mickey Dolenz, Mike Nesmith. The new record is fantastic. Let me tell you where you're going to be. Genesee Theater in Waukegan. We'll send you an update so you know where to go.
November the 4th.
On November 4th.
Without that information, I'm doomed. you might not see Michael, I have to tell you. we've been out as a the fans call us the Tukies because it's Mickey and me for the most part. Michael has joined us on occasion and will again
when he feels like it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
pretty much. But that's Michael. You know, he's the Neil Young of the Monkees, really. And we just have to you know, you take him as you find him. But Mickey and I have a wonderful time. We rock out. We do some of these rocking songs from back in the day that we've never done on tour before. From the first album, Let's Dance On, and from I think it was like the seventh album, a thing called Steam Engine, which is a real just thrashing 50s, 60s rocker. Great stuff. So come to the show, you guys.
We will, and the new record is great too. Good Times. I heard it. We were driving to Nashville. Heard a lot of it being played, and it came out in May of this year. A lot of other artists contributed to songs as well as stuff you guys wrote. Why don't you tell us about that?
We were very lucky. We start with Adam Schlesinger, who, as you probably know, wrote a song called "That Thing You Do" for the Tom Hanks movie of the same name. And he just, when they told me it was going to be him, I was really pleased because I thought that the song, That Thing You Do, absolutely nailed the 60s vibe, plus not being a tired old rehash of the 60s. We tried to do an album way back when. A lot of people sent us records and songs that had no energy left. They were just rehashes of the old ideas. And this was different. We knew when we had Adam that we weren't going to get cast-offs. Anything from the 60s we did was going to be good. You know, we did, three, four songs from the 60s, in some of them in the original version, only slightly refurbished. then four, five, six, I guess, six or seven new songs, including one that Mickey wrote, a song that I wrote way back in the old days, a song Michael wrote, recent song Michael wrote, and Michael sang on another song, whose author escapes me at the moment, which he just ripped it up. He's so tender. A wonderful record. So,
and Davey's featured on it as well, correct? Davey Jones is featured on a vocal recording as well.
We have an old Davey cut that Neil Diamond wrote. Actually, it was released way back when, but only in the very obscure time of Monkees releases. So it sounds very fresh and new, and it's very strong. And there's Davey at it, being Davey. As only Davey can do. It was, and it's classic Davey. It really is wonderful. So you get a widespread, you know, and the most important thing about the album for me is that it's not two lumps, like songs from the 60s, new songs.
Yeah.
With nothing in between. It's a very smooth spread. You listen to the whole album, you can hardly tell which are the old songs, which are the new, and which were written for and which were written by others. So like that, you know, I said on stage not too long ago, and I was interested to find out that Rivers Cuomo of Weezer, who wrote She Makes Me Laugh,
mm-hmm.
that he graduated from the same high school I did.
Hmm.
Mickey said, "You graduated?"
Hey, Peter, I know our time is limited with you. I just want to tell you this. I know it's been 50 years since the Monkees first formed, and when the TV show came on, you guys were cranking out episodes as quickly as you could to get them on TV. But there's one particular episode where your character, Peter, sells his soul to the devil to become popular. And I tell you, I still think about that episode all the time.
Do tell.
I don't know what it is about it. It's just an amazing episode.
The Faust.
Yeah.
Peter Torb plays Faust.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple of things about that episode which were really strong because there is, you know, the basic message that you can't really sell your soul to the devil. It's always.
Tell Jimmy Page that.
Well, you know, you go to Keith Richards and you think he is a man
right.
who lost it, but, you know, he's like our age and he's still cranking.
Yeah.
They're going out again. Mick Jagger's going to be a dad again, for God's sake. You know, get on. So I don't think that's so satanic, you know what I mean? They say that. But there's the message that the that if you think you're selling your soul to the devil, you will suffer the agonies of the bargain. But in fact, it's not possible. You can't do that. It's like, you know, for one thing, the soul is not really separate.
Sure. Sure.
It's like shine on chrome.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yep.
So the notion that there's something special about being able to reclaim your soul just because somebody's on your side, that, I think, is a terribly important message.
Well, you guys executed it beautifully. You really did.
Cannot wait to see you. Genesee Theater in Waukegan, November 4th. The Monkees will be there. And also, earlier, I think this June, the whole 10-disc Blu-ray collection of The Monkees, along with the 68 cult classic Head, was released. So someone's getting that for herself for Christmas.
Nice gift. Peter, an honor to meet you. Great to talk to you. We love you. We love your work. So keep going.
Thank you so much. Pleasure's mine. And incidentally, I know who's doing whom a favor here, so thank you very much.
You're more than welcome. It's Peter Tork.
Thank you, sir.
PeterTork.com, themonkees.com, and again, go see him in Waukegan. That's November the 4th.
I gotta go.
It's gonna be good. A quick break, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I'm having a hard time realizing that the guy I was crushing on when I was a teenager is 74 years old.
Yeah, they were all in their early 20s, the Monkees, and that was 50 years ago. So, yes. What question did you not get to ask Peter? Is there a question or two that was on your head that you just didn't get to ask him? We didn't have him for as much time as we would have liked. He's doing this tour, but...
I wanted to delve more into the Mike Nesmith stuff about, you know, he shows up when he feels like it. And, you know, I told you I saw Mike Nesmith at the Country Music Hall of Fame last year.
Yeah.
And he just didn't seem to, I mean, everybody was just like crazy that he was on stage.
Sure.
Like, oh my God, this is Mike Nesmith. And he just kind of really didn't seem to want to be there.
You know, for a long time, he wouldn't do any, and this is when there were, when Davey was still alive.
Yeah.
So Mike was the only one that was holding off
right.
on the shows. He's the one who kept staying away. Then he started doing a thing where if it was near him, he lives in California, he would show up and do the shows. And then like every once in a while, he'd show up in another show.
That just seems, I'm jealous. I would like to do that if you wanted to just go do something that was in close proximity to you.
Yeah.
That's what I would like to do.
Right.
It's nice to be in a position in your life to be able to do that.
Well, financially, he has by far he's made the most money because of his involvement with MTV and because his mom, I mean, it's legendary now, his mom invented liquid paper. So there's that money.
She didn't give him anything. Come on.
Oh, I think she did. I think it has to do mostly with the money aspect. He doesn't need to tour anymore, so he does it when he wants to.
Well, Peter Tork did not have to say, I know who's doing the favor here, because there have been mentions that maybe they're not filling up the arenas, but they're doing okay.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm telling you, I want to go see them. Genesee Theater in Waukegan, November 4th. Get a jump on it. Put it on your calendar right now, because you can go see at least, what did he call them? The two keys,
I think he said, instead of the Monkees.
Peter Tork and Mickey Dolenz. Michael Nesmith probably not showing up for this one. And check out their new record. It's really... really pretty good.
Yeah, they're holding up. They sound great. All right, we'll talk to Steve and find out what's on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thank you very much. Hi, everybody. Welcome to part two of our show. We started the show earlier. We got about halfway through it, and then Steve Bertrand said, I have some things I'd like to discuss from the world of business. And Wendy, I think it was you who said, by all means, take some time. Take yourself an hour and discuss away, and we'll come back later. And so we did.
I said take yourself 3 hours, but he only took 1 hour.
Right. I remember that.
We also started the show talking to Peter Tork of the Monkees.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty exciting. Genesee Theater, Waukegan, November 4th, I believe. That's from the top of my head because I want to go. And we've got a special guest coming up in about an hour.
Leah Thompson, who was the mom in the Back to the Future trilogy. Movies.
Which my son Dylan has really gotten into, and we just bought the complete adventure series, and it comes with a little booklet and everything.
Yeah.
And the actual case that it's in
yeah.
lights up. It's really cool.
The case for the
It's like
the
just
movies?
A square, you know, box to hold like all the movies.
Yeah.
And then there's a little button, and it's the transcapacitor or something or other, and it lights up, and it's really cool.
I always thought, and I liked the first movie a lot. I love the first Back fantastic. To the Future. And then the other two were fine. They weren't as great as the first one. But I always thought that the time element of Marty McFly going back and then having his mom have a crush on him was a little awkward.
Well, we should talk to Leah Thompson about that, because even my 13-year-old son questioned that.
There's a couple of things in movies that, like, when they're happening and you don't know the whole story, for instance, the kiss between Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia in A New Hope, like, you don't know yet, slight spoiler alert to the two people who have not seen Star Wars, that they are brother and sister. So when they share that kiss, you go, oh, I think Luke and Leia like each other, because you're supposed to. But then you find out they're brother and sister, and it gets a little weird. But in Back to the Future, it plays out the same way, except you already know that that's Marty McFly's mother who has a crush on him. That always...
It's so weird.
Yeah, I know.
And really, there was one time I was trying on a new dress or something, and I asked Dylan, because Dylan is my honest son who will tell me the truth.
Sure.
Michael will just say, oh, that looks great, Mom. What's for dinner? You know, he doesn't want to say anything off. Dylan, I can trust to be very honest. And he said, that looks really good, but not like really good because you're my mom. And then he brings up the Back to the Future thing. It's just weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it looks good, but I'm not supposed to be thinking my mom looks good.
Right.
Just wear whatever you want. And then he walked away.
Well, it wouldn't have been stranger if he went, yeah, that now we're, woo, that would have been really bizarre. So I think he played it properly. I really do.
You were asking me what Leah Thompson has been in. She's still currently working.
I know she's still working. She's, as we'll discuss with her, she's best known, of course, for the Back to the Future movies. And then she's in this movie called All the Right Moves, where she's the girlfriend of a very young Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty good movie.
It is pretty good.
I saw that when it first came out. But then I was thinking, I've seen her in little bit pieces here and there.
Caroline in the City. Did you forget
right.
about that?
I did. I totally forgot about that series.
That was 1995 to 2000.
Caroline in the City. I did forget about that.
And then she's working on like a, oh my God.
Her daughter's an actress, and her daughter looks just like her. Did you ever see a picture of her daughter?
No, I will look it up, but here's something you have got to promise me you will talk to Leah Thompson about.
All right.
She's in a movie called Ping Pong Summer.
I've never heard of Ping Pong Summer.
Well,
that movie, that if they were ever going to make a movie for me, it would either be Pop-Tarts the movie or Ping Pong Summer.
This is the story of your life. Listen to this.
What happens?
A family vacation during the summer of 1985 changes everything for a teenage boy obsessed with ping pong.
Hey!
This is the story of your life.
Wow. Does he eat grapefruit a lot?
I don't know.
Is Daryl Hannah in it?
Susan Sarandon's in it.
Oh, well, she loves ping pong, so that makes sense.
It totally
she
does.
She probably bankrolled the movie.
It only made $25,000 opening weekend.
Yeah, there haven't been that many great movies about ping pong. There have been a couple ping pong-based movies, but none of them high-caliber Academy Award-winning movies.
Yeah.
You know? There was the one with Christopher Walken a couple of years ago that was just kind of okay.
Ping Pong Pimp? What was
it? No. But that would have sold more tickets, I think. Your title would have sold a lot more tickets. I just want to quickly mention, you know, today's the day, this morning.
I know.
Kylie left for New York. One of my twins left for New York. And my wife and other daughter went with her.
You weren't allowed to go,
though. Ask me how that went.
I don't want to ask you.
You can ask me. Ask me how it went.
How'd it go this morning?
I don't want to talk about it.
See, I didn't want to ask you. I heard you earlier today mention that today was the day and they've already left, and I can't believe you have held yourself together.
I didn't.
Oh, God.
Last night we had... Oh, what a mess last night. We went out to one of Kylie's favorite restaurants, my whole family's favorite restaurant. We went out there last night, and then at some point, like, it was hitting me. This is really going to be the last time that all four Beatles are in the same place at the same time. And then
just for a while.
No, I know. Just
it's
until
not forever.
No, but it's the beginning of forever. You know
what
I mean?
Oh, my God. Get
it
the
is.
Tissues.
Hey, Wendy?
Yes.
Zip it, baby.
No.
You have no idea.
Hey,
it's the hardest thing.
I know. I'm going to be a basket case. I totally get it. But it's not forever.
It's not forever. Mm. But isn't it, Steve, isn't it the beginning of forever? Because you realize at this point when they're going away to school, this really is the blueprint for the future. They're growing up and, you know, moving on.
I'm thinking of getting some new kids.
I got two boys that are awesome.
When we dropped my daughter off a few years ago, I thought it's going to be so much easier with my son.
Yeah.
Because I'll have been through it.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to be harder.
It is. It doesn't make sense how emotional it is.
Yes, it does. You like your family together. I know I always say the birdies in the nest, but you do.
Right.
You feel comfortable knowing everybody's okay when you're around them all the time.
Yes, absolutely true. Last night, and I don't know how the discussion became this, but it started out of our favorite moments of just this past summer.
Oh, my God.
And then
God.
It became a
did
longer
you hear,
version.
Did music swell?
What are you
was
miss?
There a slideshow happening?
Yeah. Here's a story that Kylie brings out that I didn't think anything of until she started telling it. She says, the four of us are sitting around this table and we're enjoying our meal. And she said, you have to promise me something to my wife and myself. She goes, downstairs in the bathroom, we have an upstairs bathroom and a downstairs bathroom. Downstairs in the bathroom downstairs, and I know this is true because I've seen it. On the mirror, there's a little, remember Shrinky Dinks?
Yeah.
All right. When Reese and Kylie were little, we bought them a set of Shrinky Dinks. They kind of set it out again because we had them when we were little, and then you couldn't get them for 10 or 15 years. And then when the girls were like 4 or 5, I went Shrinky Dinks, and I got them that for a birthday present or Christmas present. And we all made Shrinky Dinks together, and all of theirs were either ladybugs or flowers. But you had the ability to make your own shape, and then you put it in the shrinker machine, and it would become small.
Didn't you just bake them on a cookie sheet?
Yeah, yeah.
You're thinking of the vacuum form.
Oh, yeah.
Or something. All right.
Yeah.
Sorry,
all right.
You're
so
emotional.
You could either color in the ones they provided for you, or there was a separate sheet that you could make your own on, and then bake it down, and it would become like 1/12 of its regular size.
Sold separately.
So right. Right.
The clear one that you could make your own sold separately.
So I made one of me wearing a Superman outfit. And this was when they were 5, so this is 14 years
ago.
You
would have done that now, though.
I still would. Right. If given the options today, I would have still done it. So Kylie said, you got to promise me something. Don't throw away the Shrinky Dink of Dad dressed like Superman that's in the downstairs bathroom. And we didn't know what to, but we go, all right, like that. We weren't going to throw it. And my wife said, why? And she goes, because every time I see that, it makes me so happy. And when Dad dies, I want to have a tattoo made of that. I don't know why I have to be dead for that to happen. I don't know why I end up dead in this scenario. But
why does she say that?
Well, I think it's because she knows. Years ago, she got a tattoo that I wasn't thrilled with, that she was getting a tattoo. But one of her friends, it's a horrible story. One of her friends died in an accident. And she got an anchor to honor her friend because she called her friend her anchor. So she has a very small, on her wrist, a very small anchor tattoo. And I wasn't thrilled with the fact that she was getting one, but she got one.
But what a great reason.
Yeah.
Can't deny her that.
So it turns out now, when I die, she'll have somewhere, I guess, on her other wrist to balance it out, a Shrinky Dink of super me dressed like Superman. I'll never get to see it.
Well, so she should do it before you die.
Let's not go too far with that. I don't know if I need that. But it was just her
saying she feels so happy when she sees it.
She said she sees it, and she goes, and every time I see it, I'm 5 years old again. And that's, I told you yesterday, whenever I see pictures of them, I'm I guess that's the purpose of pictures, isn't it? I'm transported back to that time and place. I'm not the only one who feels that. But I was watching her relay how happy this ridiculous little Shrinky Dink that I made 14 years ago. Please don't throw that away. I so look forward to seeing that every time I'm in that room. And I'm like, oh man, don't do this. I'm already on the edge.
That's
and then
pretty
I was
sweet.
Supposed to say something. Like, everyone went around the table and said something nice about Kylie, and then it comes to me, and I couldn't speak. I couldn't say anything.
So you know now, too, that every time you go in that bathroom while she's gone,
yes,
you're going to see it.
Yes.
I know, but why didn't she take it with her to remind her of you?
I don't know. I think I thought about that, and I think it's just because it belongs in that
there.
Time and place, you know?
Well, you know, you should take a picture of it. Have somebody take a picture of it with their phone.
Right.
Because if something happens to it, she has to know what tattoo to get.
Right.
And you should blow it up and send her a poster. That wouldn't be too weird if she's at college and has a picture of you as Superman.
It would be beyond weird. Can I tell you what I did do, though, that I think you'll appreciate?
Yeah.
Can I tell you? All right, let's take a quick break. And then I pulled off a little magic this morning that I think you'll appreciate.
I'll tell you what I did. You are such a good dad.
Ah. All right, more of this sort of slobberish behavior next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. This is just cruel.
A listener suggested it.
Thank you, listener, for tearing at my heartstrings. One of my daughters left for New York today for college. My other daughter, Reese, is staying local this time, which I like. Closer is better. But Kylie's venturing out to New York City to attend college there.
Ooh, ooh, itty.
She left this morning. I've been a little bit of a basket case, both last night at a say goodbye to your daughter dinner that we had, and then again this morning as I said goodbye. Now, here's what I did. There's a shirt that I have, a flannel shirt, that I wear a couple times a year, two or three times a year, a green and white shirt. She loves this shirt. She wears it all the time. And she said to me a couple of weeks ago, hey, when I go, I can take the shirt, right? And I go, absolutely not. She goes, but I love that shirt. That's my favorite fall and winter shirt. I said, well, then find one like it, because that's my shirt. I wear that a couple times a year. You can't take that shirt. Knowing in my head how the story would end, she would have the shirt. But I said, you can find a shirt like that easily. And she goes, but it's that. I love that one. And I go, well, you got to find your version of that one. That's my shirt. So, again, yesterday we had a little back and forth. Dad, you're going to let me take the shirt, right? I go, Kylie, I can't do that. You know that's my shirt. So this morning I got up a little extra early, put a note in the shirt just saying, here's the shirt, punk, take care of it and yourself.
That's really sweet, but I can't believe how selfish you were for not giving her the shirt in the first place.
Well, but she
So this
knew,
isn't really that but, great of a
no,
thing.
No, but she knows me. She knows she's
she knew,
not.
Yeah,
there's
she knew
no
she
way.
Was getting the shirt.
I buried it in her you know, boxes of clothes,
oh, so
she
doesn't
won't
need...
see it. No, she'll see it when she's...
Oh, my God, she is going to cry like
when
a baby.
When she's in, well,
that's
not
what
as
you
much
wanted.
As me.
Oh, you are just...
Nah.
Listener Bill, isn't this just sweet?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I'm going through, Bill? You go through this too?
Actually, I've got to be honest with you. I don't have any kids, but I do remember going through this when I left the house and what my mom and dad went through. So during my senior year, and if you really want a good cry, what you need to do is you need to listen to Harry Belafonte's Turnaround. Do you remember that song?
I know that song. Yeah.
You guys, hey, the two Bills, I think there's a sale on tampons at Walgreens.
My son used to sing that song.
Did he?
When he was a toddler.
Did
he
really?
We had it by Nancy Griffith, and he would sit in this car seat and sing that song.
Yeah, that's a hard one to listen to. She's Leaving Home does me in, too. Yeah.
All right, Bill.
Bill, thank you.
So if
wait, hold on. Sorry. Hey, sorry about that. I just dropped my my mite all. okay, now I'm back.
Thanks for being such a good sport.
The callers are now heckling themselves. It's, now, it's come one. To callers now heckling themselves.
Listen, I'm telling you, you have done a great job holding it together all morning.
Thank you. There were tears nearly the entire way in.
You're going to cry yourself to sleep tonight,
you know,
aren't you?
Yeah,
because they'll
all
gone.
Be gone. You know, she said last night, when talking to her friends, and Reese echoed her sentiments, we're very close. I don't know how it happened, but we got very fortunate because everybody kept saying with the girls, you love them now because they're five, but wait until they hit the age of 11 or wait till they become teenagers or wait till they start high school, whatever. And for some reason, I don't know what it is. It was never a problem. We just stayed close with them and we do stuff together all the time. And Kylie even said yesterday, all my friends are very jealous of, you know, the relationship I have with you guys because they don't have that.
Really?
And I'm just, yeah, none of that teen angst that came out with other kids, for some reason, I don't know how we lucked out. We just didn't get that with either girl.
Well, that's your blessing and that's your legacy.
So
and
lucky.
I hope you don't die soon because, you know, really,
you.
Kylie doesn't need another tattoo.
No, I know.
That is such a weird thing to say, though.
I thought so, too. But I was such an emotional wreck yesterday. No matter what she would have said yesterday, I was just, and we're at a restaurant. There's people at all these other tables. They're looking at me and I kept going, I just saw Brian's song. I just watched Brian's song like 10 minutes ago.
Be honest, were your three girls making fun of you for crying?
Constantly.
I know. Why
Constantly.
Do they do that? I think it's such a touching side of you.
Because it should be. I mean, if the stereotype plays true, they'd be the ones crying, and
Bill,
I'd be the one sitting back going,
you are
come
not
on.
Your typical guy. Like, I have to tell you that. You're really not, and that's what makes you you.
I guess.
Are you going to cry now?
Not now, but at some point today. But not now.
All right. Pam, we don't have a lot of time, but I wanted you to get on the air. What did you want to join in with?
I am totally feeling you, Bill. I have triplets.
Mm.
Just two boys and a girl, just dropped my daughter off on Saturday. Have pretty much been crying. I've had two doctor's appointments, made both of my doctors cry.
Oh, my God.
I'm telling them, like, how are you doing? And they're crying, and I'm crying. I had to cut my appointment short yesterday with the physical therapist because the Macy Gray I Try song comes on.
Yeah, sure.
I try to walk away. She's like, we better shut this down. And what was hardest for me is my three kids saying goodbye to each other because they were adamant about not going to the same college. And they've always gotten along. They've never fought. They've always been really, really close to each other. So I kind of thought it would be easy for them. But when we dropped my daughter, she's at the University of Kentucky, and they're huddled together, and I can hear them whispering and saying, you know, we'll be together again soon. We'll see each other. We'll all be back together in Thanksgiving, and, like, trying to prop each other up.
All right, that makes me so sad hearing the three triplets commiserating with one another, and God, that is beautiful. That's it. My son is going to junior college. I am not letting him go away.
That's it.
I know. And my guy, everyone's like, oh, you handled it so well, Pam. I'm like, I really wanted to say, come home, come be with mommy. You don't have to stay if it makes you sad.
Right.
Your room is always there.
Right.
Oh, hang in there, Pam, all right? Thank you for sharing
that. Thanks, Pam.
Oh,
thank you.
I just...
Huh?
They're not, you know, we were just talking about this yesterday because Michael's going to be going away. I have one more year and then I'm going to be crying like a baby.
Yeah.
And Dylan's just going into eighth grade. And I'm like, but when they go to college, they will come back. They're probably going to live in the basement. And I said, I'm okay with that.
Right.
Not forever.
But for a limited time
offer. To let them get, you know, on their feet.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, Bill, here's a virtual hug from one of the
listeners.
Thank
you. Thank you, listener, for the virtual hug. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more show. Some of it happier, probably. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, the Olympics continue in Rio de Janeiro. And all of the Olympic athletes this year are getting mugged. Did you hear about this? Every one of them, they're all getting mugged. Or maybe not. Maybe they're just telling people they're getting mugged.
Yeah, we don't know the facts
on that.
We don't
know for sure. Now, here's a weird story having to do with Usain Bolt, who is, as you know, we talked about him at great lengths the other day. He's the fastest man on earth.
Yep.
And the guy runs like a machine. I mean, he's amazing to watch. Well, Ellen DeGeneres put on Twitter a picture of Usain Bolt running. It's a screen capture of him running one of his races. And then she superimposed. And when I say she, I don't know if she did this or somebody on her staff, but this is an ongoing thing. She'll superimpose herself into pictures of things.
Photoshop.
Yeah, she Photoshops stuff. So she said something about how from now on this is how she's going to do her errands. And it's Usain Bolt running, and then she's just kind of piggybacking off of his back. Well, the problem is that there's a large contingency of people who somehow have contorted this into something racist. Ellen DeGeneres, this is a story from Entertainment Weekly. Ellen DeGeneres is responding to accusations of racism that she's been receiving since posting an edited photo of herself and Usain Bolt to her Twitter account. Ellen DeGeneres wrote, I am highly aware of the racism that exists in our country. It is the furthest thing from who I am.
Which I 100% believe her.
If there was a number higher than 100%, I would put it in that bracket.
There were other people I might doubt it, but Ellen DeGeneres, I'm telling you, she did not mean that in any racist way at all. He's the fastest man on earth.
Right.
That's what she meant.
It was all based on the fact that if I could just be on the back of the fastest man on earth, whatever my errands are would be done in seconds.
Exactly.
There's
end of
no
discussion.
There's not a single racist connotation. I want to give some weird twisted credit to the people who were able to find this, find some racism in this. I don't know if I've told you this. On two different occasions, I have met her. I worked with her once at the Improv here in Chicago, and then another time there was a TV taping in Florida that a friend of mine was involved in, and she was there. And in both times, I had incredible conversations with her. And what you see on television is absolutely 100% her. She's one of the most genuine people you could ever imagine. She's just
she must be a saint if you're not finding fault with her in any way, shape, or form.
Zero fault.
I love her.
Yeah,
I think
she's fantastic.
So funny.
The best in terms of talk show hosts, the best that ever did a daytime show.
Yeah,
she's just perfect at it. You know,
and she's got a lot of heart. Mm. She's got compassion. You know, when gay marriage became legal. She was so happy, and so why would she do anything to go against somebody's race or gender or anything? She would never do that.
Not only would she not do it, if you watch the show with any regularity, you see it's a constant segment on the show. She takes people of all different races and backgrounds, creeds, colors, religions, and if they're having some sort of hardship, she goes out of her way to help fix it as best she can.
I know. She's amazing.
So there's a lot of people out there that you could find some sort of there's some connotation of some sort of racism in something they say or do. I would say that Ellen DeGeneres is not one of those people, I would say. And when you see this picture and you know her history for putting herself, photoshopping herself in celebrity pictures, there was never a part of her that went, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll make it look like I'm using a black person as a slave to help get me from here to there. That's what I'll do. That was never, ever her intention.
You know that Bolt retweeted this, so he's cool with it, too.
Is he?
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I sure hope so.
He retweeted it, so he didn't think twice about it. It is funny. End of discussion.
Right.
It is not racist. It is funny.
Right.
Hi, Joe.
Yeah, you know, with the fact that Ellen DeGeneres is a homosexual, she's dealt with a lot of, you know, this kind of bigotry in her life. So how does anybody really believe that she would sit there and be racist, openly racist about something like that, you know, with the plight of black people in America that have had?
Knowing what it's like to be a minority herself,
right.
Yeah, you would say,
yeah.
Well, that's the last person that would want to do something like that. Sure,
exactly.
Of course.
I mean, yeah, so, I mean, it's ridiculous. I'm no fan of Ellen DeGeneres by any stretch of the imagination, but I absolutely believe her in this case when she says that, you know, she meant no disrespect to anybody, you
sure.
know?
Sure. Joe, I am curious. What you say you're not a fan. Is there a reason? Did something happen?
I just don't like her comedy. That's all.
Yeah. All right.
Fair. She just. It's like I don't really care for Jerry Springer either. I just don't. You know.
Well, he's not a comedian.
Not Jerry Springer.
Seinfeld.
Oh, Seinfeld.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
I just don't care for him. I like Jay Leno and, you know, that kind of stuff. I just don't care for her humor.
All right.
That's all.
That's fair.
And that's a personal choice. But look at you defending her. And, you know, I do hear people mumbling and grumbling a lot. God, you know, we're too politically correct. You know, sometimes we are. Just don't hurt other people. This was not meant to hurt anyone. It was supposed to be funny.
Right. Yeah. It just looks like somebody's trying to make something out of this because I don't think anybody's been able to make anything racist really out of the Olympics. So I think this is probably the only thing they could grab onto. You know what I mean?
Sure. Joe, thank you.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Do you know what she says? Do you know how she closes every episode of The Ellen Show?
No.
She, at the end of every single episode, she says, be kind to each other. That's her message at the end of every show. And could you say that with, is there any way you could end every show with the words be kind to each other and then purposely put a racist post like she's being accused of? You can't.
Speaking of Jerry Springer, she ripped that off from him because he ended every show with be good to each other.
Oh, did he?
Every
did
single
he really?
Solitary show. And it's weird that Joe, our listener, just mentioned Jerry Springer.
But in Springer's
I know, he
case,
didn't mean it. She does.
Don't you agree? I mean, his show was about people just beating on each other every day, and then he would end with be good to each other. But if you watched the hour of his show, his show was not based on people being good to each other.
Listen, I am no Ron Majors. I like Jerry Springer. I'm not saying I loved his show. I like him, the man. And at the very beginning of his show, it did seem like he was trying to offer help to some of these people. And
first
then
two episodes, maybe?
Maybe
three?
A few, maybe.
Yeah.
But then it just turned into a freak show.
Right. But that's weird that a guy who was making
every episode
a fortune on people punching each other.
He'd do like a little update of what happened to the, you know, and here's how we fixed this and we provided help and, you know, I'm Jerry Springer and be good to each other. He said that every time. So she totally lifted it from
maybe
him.
Maybe she did.
She's a Springerist.
Oh. Right. All right. More coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. Boogie down, boogie chillin'.
Yes, what Wendy said. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. We're at 312-981-7200, talking about a controversy that I don't think should even exist, but it seems to be. It's all over the internet. Ellen DeGeneres posted a photograph of herself. It's an edited photograph, a Photoshop, as the kids like to say, of herself riding on the back of Usain Bolt, the world's fastest man, and then words to the effect of, this is how I'm going to get my chores done from now on, as if to say, look, if I want to do things faster.
She said errands. Chores might be.
What did she say? Errands?
Errands.
I don't remember.
Chores might be a little taken the wrong way.
I thought I was watching a Lassie episode. all right. So she's saying essentially, hey, if I want to get things done quicker, I just ride on this guy and everything's done within seconds.
Because he's the fastest man on earth.
Right.
And he retweeted it, so he didn't have a problem with it. So why do other people make problems with this?
I don't know. But some people are saying, oh, how racist of Ellen DeGeneres to do this, but that's a tough putt.
All right, and Pam, you are you wanted to comment on what an earlier listener had talked about. Ellen is gay and has had, you know, some tough times with people accepting that. Why would she try and be a racist? But you have a theory.
Oh, actually, I have two comments. The first one is that just because someone is homosexual doesn't mean that, and because they've encountered discrimination does not mean that they can't be racist or have racist thoughts. Now, I don't think Ellen DeGeneres is racist, and I don't think that she intended the picture as racist, but it doesn't have anything to do with her orientation because there are people who are gay who can be racist.
Sure, I'm sure.
But I did want to make one other quick comment too, just as being a black woman myself. When I saw the photo, I didn't think, oh, my goodness, that's racist. But it was an uncomfortable photo. I mean, given our history in this country and how the past of blacks as slaves, to see a white woman on the back of a black man is not an image that I'm super comfortable with. That doesn't mean I would automatically call it out as racism, though.
And I can see your point, but I mean, it has something to do with the, he's the fastest man on earth. That didn't, like, oh, I get it, it's fast. Oh, it just looks bad
like
that
I
she's
said,
on
I,
a...
I got that, and
no,
I
know.
That's why, yeah, but yeah.
But it's interesting. It did still kind of bother you a little bit.
It did. Yeah, definitely. And I think the more people can, like, talk about it without blame or without shaming people for feeling as they feel, then the better off we'll be.
See, that's what has to happen, Pam. We all have to talk about things. It's so terrible when people just start fighting and it's like, it's my way or the highway. You got to discuss it.
Yep.
Thank you for calling. We totally appreciate that.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye, Pam. When I was doing stand-up, I was working in Atlanta, Georgia, a suburb of Atlanta, Buckhead, Georgia. And I went into a gas station one day, and it wasn't just a gas station, but it was...
like a convenience store as well?
Like, you know how, I'm trying to think of the one that I think most people would know would be Stuckey's. Remember how...
Pecan Logs. How could I forget? They were gift shops. They were... You could get Kaopectate.
Yes. It was that kind of a
shop. Snacks.
Some gas stations, some gifts, and, of course, the Kaopectate section was huge. That's the reason I went in. I got that as gifts for my friends and family. So keep in mind, it's Georgia. And as I wander back into the quote-unquote gift area, it's all like mammy dolls and stuff from the old South. You know, it's like stuff
that is
nothing but, like, in my opinion, stuff that harkens back to a terrible, terrible era. And I know it existed, and I know you can't hide it, but there it was in the gift shop. And not just like a little bit here and a little bit there, but it was like most of the gift shop. And then when I paid for the gas, the lady up front was an African-American lady. And I said, I know this is a weird question, but I'm just as curious as I could possibly be. Does that stuff bother you back there? And she goes, what? And I go, the stuff that's in the gift shop? And she goes, does it bother me how? And I go, just what it represents. And she goes, no, people come in, they want a souvenir, and that's what we're selling. And I go, I know, but that, in a way, it's got to bother you just a little bit that you're, and she goes, no, not at all.
Really?
But I can't figure out how that wouldn't have bothered her.
She needed the job, evidently.
Well, right. I know a job is a job, and you do what they pay you to do, but...
That seems odd.
Yeah. Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
A lot of parts of the South seem odd to me.
Well, I know that if you go region by region, there's going to be, you know, stuff like that, but that's just so blatant. And again, I'm not saying you can deny that that period existed. I know it didn't. It's important that we know what our history was, but I don't know that I could work in a shop where that's what they were selling as memorabilia of your trip.
That's
I'd
pretty bad.
I'd be very
bad.
Uncomfortable with it.
I mean, how many years? This was a while ago,
This was about 20-something years, or 21, 22, 23 years ago, somewhere in there.
I'm curious to know if anybody has stopped in a Stuckey's like area in Alabama.
Yeah,
I said Stuckey's like.
Yeah, it wasn't Stuckey's because I don't remember seeing that stuff in there. I mean, there's always like Confederate flags and stuff,
right?
And you know, you can deal with that. But this was just as
bleak. I don't even like to see
giant
that.
Cookie jars and I know people like in the past. One time on the Night Show, I was talking about this sort of thing, and people said, well, what about Uncle Ben's rice and what about Mrs. Butterworth and stuff like that? And I'll be honest with you. I'm still surprised with even Uncle Ben's rice and Mrs. Butterworth that hasn't been changed. That, to me, seems a little outdated.
It does.
Doesn't it?
I agree with you. I got to take this call.
But sure.
Kevin, put Nick through.
Hello.
Hi, Nick. How's it going? Oh, we just lost Nick.
What
did
happened?
You hit it and I hit it? I can hit it myself. I know how to touch my buttons. All right, what was Nick going to say? Because we have to take a break.
Nick was commenting that he lost his respect for Ellen, and I don't know the comments for sure, but the comments she made, I think, when she was hosting the Oscars about Liza Minnelli, whether she was like a female impersonator, is ringing a bell?
Yeah. Liza Minnelli was there, and she said how much this person looked like Liza Minnelli.
It was Liza.
And it was Liza Minnelli, right.
And wasn't sure if it was Liza or a female.
Or somebody dressed to look like Liza Minnelli. But it's one of those, it's a joke at the Academy Awards. I remember thinking it was really funny, but going, oh, I bet that'll be uncomfortable if Liza's ever on Ellen's show.
Yeah, but can I just tell you something? Ellen's not going to say something that... She wants to push the envelope a little bit. If she really thought it was terrible, she wouldn't have said it.
Right. True.
I mean,
she's not a shock comic. I mean,
no, and comedy's not always pretty. You know that from doing it.
Right.
I mean,
right. You have to take some chances. Right. Absolutely. All right. We'll take a quick break. More show coming your way, including Leah Thompson from the Back to the Future trilogy. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, you know what you can do? We can all go back in time this weekend. It's a Back to the Future reunion. Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, and our next guest, Leah Thompson, will be showing up in Rosemont. How are you, Leah?
I'm great. I'm great.
You are great.
Yeah, I'm really excited to come to Chicago. I'm from Minnesota, and I always love to come to the Midwest, and I'm really excited.
You know, it's my 13-year-old son, Dylan, just got the complete adventure set of Back to the Future. I was telling Bill the little case that it comes in lights up. Mm. They've seen the movie before, but it's a repeat. This is a very generational movie, especially in your family, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know, my mother-in-law watches the movie with her daughter, her daughter's daughter, and her daughter's daughter.
Wow.
So, four generations of Deutsch girls can enjoy Back to the Future together, which is an amazing feat, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty darn exciting. And I think the movie has, like, incredible legs, you know? It, like, keeps, you know, reinventing itself because, you know, when we made it, it was kind of, like, nostalgic and making fun of the 50s, and now it's nostalgic and making fun of the 80s and the 50s. So it kind of just keeps becoming... you know, relevant in a weird way.
You know what else helps that, Leah, a little bit, is they keep inventing things that you guys in the movie had, like the hoverboards all of a sudden are a reality, or there's that scene that's famous here in Chicago where the Cubs play Miami in the World Series. Like when you guys put that in, it was just fiction. We laughed. We saw it on the screen, and now it's like, well, that could happen.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess some of this stuff did, and now we've just, you know, passed the, you know, the last, you know, the future date of Back to Future, but yeah.
Which makes me really sad in a way.
I know. Yeah. I know. But, you know, it's really fun for us, you know, for Michael and me and Christopher Lloyd and I, you know, that was bad English, sorry. Christopher, myself, and Michael to get together and celebrate this with fans, you know, and to enjoy the 30th anniversary and, you know, just really, really enjoy the fact that people still love the movie and like to watch it.
How was that reunion? That happened, what, in March in California? How was the reunion? Had you seen Christopher or Michael for a while?
I've seen Christopher. Oh, I see him, you know, maybe we do one or two of these events a year at the Comic-Con. We go to, he does a lot of Comic-Cons. I do like two of them. So sometimes I see him and we do panels and it's really, really fun. I've done a lot of movies with Chris Lloyd, though, besides Back to the Future. So we did Dennis the Menace together, and we did.
You shot that here, right? Would you do in Chicago?
Yeah, 6 months in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was great. I loved living there by the zoo, and you know, that was a great movie. So I've spent a lot of time with Chris, but I don't see Michael that much. But it's nice when we do, and the fans always enjoy our, you know, we do these Q&As, and the fans really enjoy them. So
is this part true or not, Leah? We hear stuff on the internet, so you tell me, you lived it. Did they start shooting this movie, Back to the Future, not with Michael, but with Eric Stoltz, and then they replaced him? Is that true?
Oh, yeah, that's totally
that
true.
That is true.
Yeah. 6 weeks of it, really. So, yeah, we did a lot of scenes, and some of the close-ups that they shot, that we shot, like a close-up that I did when Eric was playing Marty, they kept in the movie, so I was kind of acting with somebody else.
Wow. What happened?
Yeah, how did Eric Stoltz screw up?
He's such a good actor. What happened, do you think?
I think it was just a difference in styles. You know, Michael's a very different actor, and the style just didn't fit. I mean, we were all doing kind of like it wasn't a super realistic or naturalistic performance. None of us were doing very naturalistic performances in the movie. So when Eric was doing one of those, it just didn't fit, you know?
Oh.
So the movie was decidedly less funny and more serious. And I think they really needed Michael to, you know, hold it up and be funny.
Yeah. And then what happened? Wendy and I have had Crispin Glover on the show with us, and that's always an experience. And like
he was fascinating.
He is so intriguing
and so unusual.
But now he played your husband. He played George McFly in the first movie and then the third movie, right? But not the second.
No, he only did the first movie, and they hired a lookalike to play him in the second and third movies.
Yeah. And that another difference of opinion, right?
Yeah, he just was, I guess, a little too confounding for them.
Yeah.
but he was nonetheless brilliant. I thought he was brilliant in Back to the Future 1. And he's just a very interesting person. And, you know, they just weren't really in the mood to put up with it. So, and it was unfortunate, you know. It was sad.
Yeah.
Eventually, Robert Zemeckis, who directed Back to the Future, hired him in Beowulf or something.
Oh,
did he?
So he worked
him again. And so that, I guess that rift was healed. But, yeah, he was just very eccentric and young.
Yeah.
Very young. He was only like 19 or 20.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we were young.
Yeah.
Oh, and, we're still young.
Yes.
Still young, of course.
What about, Wendy and I were saying earlier before we had you on, there's a little bit of a storyline when Marty goes back in time, your character develops a little bit of a crush on him. And like, even when I first saw that as a kid, I wasn't sure quite what to make of that. Was that awkward, or did you just go, well, this is part of the story, I guess?
Well, it's a really funny part of the story.
It is really funny.
Really weird part of the story. And it was ultimately why the movie was first brought to Disney, and they were like, no, we can't do a movie about
Not another incest comedy.
Yeah.
We can't do that again.
We can't do this movie about a kid whose mom falls in love with him, and he has to make sure his mom and dad get together, or his life will be erased.
Yes.
You know? So, no, Disney was like, no, not happening. So they had to go to Universal. And, it was definitely an interesting element, but I thought it was hilarious and funny. And
it is.
So I was delighted by the weirdness of it, but that's just me.
And it had to happen just right. I mean, it really was like a great suspenseful part of the movie. Although I will say, Leah, my son Dylan, I said he's 13, and I was trying on a dress. I said, how does this look? And he goes, Mom, that looks really good, but I feel funny answering that question because, and he had just seen Back to the Future and brought that part up. He's like, you're not supposed to like your mom in that way. I said, but you got to make sure that everything comes together and is timed correctly. So it is weird, but it's a funny, suspenseful moment.
Yeah, and it really was nerve-wracking because it really required acting. Like, I don't know if you remember when I kiss him.
Yes.
And then the whole thing has to change. I have to fall out of love with him.
Right.
Yes.
Out of love and lust with him in that one moment when I kiss him. So that's really interesting when a huge plot point
right.
turns on just an acting moment.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, usually it's, you know, something else. But they were very nervous about that moment, I remember.
Well, with good reason. And then there's another scene, and when Wendy and I had Crispin Glover on, I told him this. There's a scene where there's a little parallel universe scene, and all of a sudden, Marty's parents are really cool, way cooler than they would normally be. They're very cool. And I said, myself and my friends who saw that movie with me, after we saw it, we all said, wow, I get that. Because every kid, there's some point where you go, boy, if only my parents were a little bit cooler. So that scene really plays out very true.
Yeah, Crispin was really nervous when we shot that scene. And I'm sure he didn't tell you the story, but he decided that in order for us to prepare to act that scene when we were the cool parents at the end of Back to the Future 1,
yeah.
that we should paint a painting of a volcano together.
Yeah. Because why?
I don't know.
You don't know.
But we did. We painted a painting of a volcano together, and that was our act. That's how we prepared to act in that scene.
Where is that painting now that you painted?
No, the terrible news about that painting is my mother was like, this is the worst painting I've ever seen. My mom's a painter. I'm going to paint over it.
Oh, no.
She painted a bunch of angels over it. It's quite a beautiful painting.
Leah, is it true that that painting was originally played by Eric Stoltz? I read that somewhere.
The painting?
Yes,
it was. The painting was originally played by Eric
Stoltz. That's weird.
But you do have some props from the movies, I understand.
I do. Well, I don't know where they are anymore, but I did keep my fake boobs from Back to the Future 2.
Oh.
They were like a big plastic prosthetic that they built on my chest.
Come on, you should sell those on eBay.
Yes.
No, you know what happens? That latex stuff gets really stinky and gross.
Oh, man.
25 years.
Ruin the fantasy. Leah Thompson is here from Back to the Future and from many other projects, and we'll discuss those next. She's appearing at the Wizard World Comic-Con Saturday and Sunday at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont. Go to wizardworld.com. All your ticket information's there. We'll continue this conversation next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and we are chatting with Leah Thompson, who is going to be at Wizard World Comic-Con Saturday and Sunday. It's happening at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont. I'm going Saturday. I think you're going tomorrow. You can go to wizardworld.com. Leah, while we're on the air, people text in if they don't feel like calling in, and we have a lot of texts of listeners love you, love Leah Thompson in Some Kind of Wonderful, loved Caroline in the City, and then it says, ask Leah about the time she was caught streaking.
Mm.
What do we need to know?
I don't, that's so interesting. I went streaking across the bridge, some big giant bridge in Minneapolis where I'm from.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, you know, it was really just a slap on the wrist. No big problem.
Is this before or after you're famous? Were you famous at this point or not?
No. But you know, I love a good skinny dip, just like anybody else.
Yes.
That is pretty fun. It's very freeing.
And Leah, I know this about you because my mom was a dance teacher for years, but you studied very, very seriously, and you've been in a bunch of ballets over the years, right?
Yeah, I did probably over like 42 different ballets in my short career as a ballet dancer. And it was my first love. I mean, I think it's a great thing to study dance and study music. I mean, it just makes you feel good to, I don't know, to move.
Sure,
you know?
Of course.
And I really feel grateful that I had that career before this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are, you know, usually we like to ask guests about their Wikipedia page because everything is always wrong on it. But usually IMDb is accurate. Let's ask you this. Was Mikhail Baryshnikov a fan of your dancing? Did he have some criticism of you?
No, I don't think he didn't like my dancing. He just told me I was too stocky. I didn't really have the right.
What?
Body. I know.
He did?
Yeah. He was right.
He didn't
though.
See a skinny dip, I bet.
I was very depressed by his comments, so I walked out and I quit dancing and I became an actress within like 3 months. I was in a movie. So it was the best thing that ever happened to me, but
see?
At the time I was a little bit sad.
That's awful.
You take the adversity and turn it around in your favor.
Yeah, you know, I feel like people most of the time don't end up doing the first thing they think they're going to do. You know, like
right.
End up doing something you didn't expect to do, but it was better for you. So.
But what does Mikhail Baryshnikov know about dancing?
I know.
He doesn't know anything about dancing. Come on.
Listen, if you got a guy that has a better body than you or better hair when you're a woman, that is a problem.
Yeah, that's bad.
Or a smaller butt.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
There's that, too. Leah, about not even a year ago, I saw this thing online. It was celebrities and their lookalike children, and I'm going through it, and then you're on there with one of your daughters. You have two daughters, right?
Yes.
All right, so I want to say Zoe.
Zoe.
Who's also an actress. Both your daughters are actresses, right?
Yes. Yeah, Zoe. Zoe really does look a lot like me, and she especially looks like me. She just did a movie where she had the same hairdo I have had in Back to the Future, and the same costume designer from Back to the Future.
Wow.
It's called Rebel in the Rye, and she really looks a lot like me in that. And I just directed a movie with both of them in it, and my oldest daughter Madeline wrote it. So
oh, that's excellent.
Wrote it. Yeah.
What's it called?
That was exciting. It's called The Year of Spectacular Men. And it's a lovely, funny, you know, honest look at what it's like to be a millennial right now, a millennial woman. So it's funny. And, yeah, so I spent the whole year kind of working with those two. And
pleasant experience. You like that?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I hope the movie comes out and has some success, obviously. But yeah, it was really fun. You know, like a family event.
Sure. The Year of Spectacular Men is the title. Look for it, everybody. Year of Spectacular Men.
Yeah, it's funny. It's good.
And how's old Huey Lewis doing? Who provided such a great soundtrack to Back to the Future films?
I saw him in New York. He was doing great. He's so funny, and I think his whole career is having a good resurgence. You know, there's so many people that are going to see these, you know, bands from our, you know, youth. And so he seemed great, like awesome.
You know, it's so retro. I know Back to the Future, it's retro to us, but so many new generations of kids are looking at it now. We just had Terry Nunn from the band Berlin in the studio with us, and she was awesome. And it's like, I love all this 80s stuff. I'd like to go back to the 80s where I'd have my head shaved. It was a fun time.
Yeah, it was. It was a good time. Unfortunately, I worked through most of it. So
yeah.
I was like always working, but which is, you know, a pain. But I had
a gig.
Yeah. I had an exciting moment happen because I'm in a comic book.
You are?
Yeah.
What's the comic book?
I'm in the Howard the Duck comic
book. Oh, yeah, you would be,
excellent.
Wouldn't you?
As Leah Thompson.
How about that?
Hey, you have achieved greatness right then and there with that.
I know. I'm telling you right now, I'm expecting to sign a few of them at the Comic-Con.
You will?
Yes.
Now, are you upset? That movie's been kind of maligned for years and years and years. Are
cult
you upset?
Classic.
It's a cult classic, though. So where do you stand on the movie? Are you okay with it or not okay with it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I own up to it all. So, yes, I've always owned up to it. There's so many fans. It's crazy.
Sure.
It's so much fun, you know, and I like those kind of people who are willing to to go against the grain, you know, who aren't going to be told that something is, you know, horrible.
Right.
That's one of the things I love about Comic-Cons is that everybody has their own individual thing that they're passionate about. And it can be, you know, not the normal thing that everybody else is crazy about. And yep. I love those people. It's so much fun to see people just having their own thing and being super excited about it, and they don't care what anybody thinks. And I love people like that.
We all have our inner geek, don't we?
Yeah.
We really do.
And it's inner geek chic right now. So
yes, it is. So well said. Leah, an honor to meet you. We're both, Wendy and I, huge fans, and you're really nice, so thank you for that.
Thank you, and I'm sorry I'm not going to meet you. I'm going to only be there Saturday and Sunday at Comic-Con, so I'm going to miss
you. You'll probably meet Wendy there.
Yes,
she'll stop by.
My son Dylan just got two tortoises and named them Doc and Marty, so I think we're going to have to get a third one and name it Lorraine.
I hope so.
That's the highest honor a human can be paid.
It really could. No, she's 100%. In a comic book. That's more exciting.
That's better.
100%.
So nice to see you. You can go to wizardworld.com. She'll be there Saturday and Sunday. I'm going Saturday. Donald D. Stevens Convention Center. Such a pleasure to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, Leah. All right, we'll take a quick break and then find out what's in the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder with you on WGN. 312-981-7200 is, of course, our phone line and our text line. I don't know if you'll remember this, Wendy. I hope you do. But earlier this year, I want to say late February or early March, we told you the story about a guy who's advertising on Craigslist. He wants a roommate. And that's why you go to Craigslist sometimes is maybe you have an apartment to let, or maybe you're a guy or a girl looking for an apartment.
That is the last place I would go.
Craigslist? How come? Why do you say that?
I would post a little, you know how you can take a piece of paper and rip a bunch of pieces at the bottom and put your name on
yes.
it. I would just hang that up in the office.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. Looking for a roommate, and then it has your name and your phone number on it.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And then
idea.
You know the person.
Right.
And then...
Right, so in your case, if Kevin or Bill wasn't looking for a roommate, you'd be out of luck.
Oh.
Well, no. What if you get kicked out of the house, Bertrand, and you need a place to shack up
Wendy
for a while?
Wendy took you in, Steve.
I would.
But it's this, nice, what Steve it? Is saying is if you're on Craigslist, you're opening it up to many, many more
yeah,
possibilities.
Yeah, but that's what's scary.
But yeah, you could get a non-desirable. You could get a... One of those non-desirables. This guy seems like, and we told you his story back in February or March, but now he's back on again. He seems like a nice enough guy. He is I say this parenthetically, he is a Satan worshiper and is also looking for another Satan worshiper to be his roommate.
Why do you say that parenthetically?
Because I don't know. Is that the most important part of the story?
That's a big deal breaker for me.
All right. I guess some people would be turned off by it. I'll read you a little bit of his description, and then I will read you, I think the most important part are his requirements for what he wants in a potential roommate. First, the ad starts out, and it's on Craigslist as of now. It's located at Chicago and Western. That's where his apartment is. Seems like a nice place. You'd be getting a private room, a private bath, street parking. It doesn't say anything about...
Do you light a candle when you're worshiping Satan?
Worshippers? If you're in a romantic mood. What does this mean, W/D in unit?
W.
Washer-dryer.
Washer-dryer in unit.
That's right. Nice.
Yeah, it's all the amenities are there. It says, hello and hail Satan.
Right there, I'm out.
You gave him four words and you're done?
Yeah. The hello works.
Hello
that's
is
a good.
That's a nice greeting. But I could see where the hail Satan people would turn some off. Let me make this clear. The intent of this space is to recruit active members to apply for a satanic organization chapter, and residents must be active or else may be asked to leave. So you can't say to him, me too. I'm a big Satan worshiper like you. But if you're not an active member, he'll be wise to that, and you'll be out on the street.
Is it like one of the tests? Does he see if you can make fire by
yes.
rubbing two sticks together?
Or by using your mind. If you're not interested in this, then don't bother. Really, don't bother, it says in the ad. I live in this space currently with a guy that I was hosting off couch surfing.
What?
I don't know what that means.
Kevin?
What does that mean, Kevin, if somebody...
Couch surfing is a website where you can, instead of like doing a house, a hostel, or an Airbnb, you can just stay at somebody's house with them and sleep on the couch.
Oh.
Couch surfing. I think it's like couchsurf.com or
How
something.
How much can you get for that? I got three couches.
I don't know. What kind of couches are we talking here?
One's a sectional.
Oh.
One is really comfortable. Yeah. And one is in the Star Wars room.
Oh.
All hail Star Wars.
Hail Star Wars. It says, by the way, this is still in the description of the apartment. By the way, a pig also lives in our house.
Excuse me?
A pig. Rent is about $360 plus utilities, so it's affordable. I installed a new dishwasher. There's also a brand new $1,600 LG washer-dryer combo. That's the
nice
WDN unit we were referring to earlier. It's one of those that does both one unit for space saving. I'm still on the fence as to whether or not it was worth it, as the drying part kind of leaves a lot to be desired. This guy's spending a lot more time talking about the washer and dryer than he is about the Satan worshiping.
Yeah, that's
important. Well, look at your washer and dryer. Your washer rips all your clothes up.
It does.
That's why you take everything to the dry cleaners.
But I suppose most of the wash there would just be black robes and stuff, wouldn't they? I don't know what else he's washing and drying.
Well, the good thing is black is very slimming.
It is. It is.
And it doesn't show stains as much as
white. No, I give you. Okay. If you use it, I would ask you for an additional $10 per month to cover the wear and tear. Alternatively, there is a washer and dryer also in the basement, and then it says coin.
Okay, that is all he cares about, is the washer and dryer. Oh, and there's a pig.
And he's charging his roommate to use the washer and dryer?
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
It's not a lot. It's an extra $10 a month.
He had me up until this part.
That's where he lost you?
Yep.
Then he talks a little bit about the configuration of the apartment, where the bedrooms are, where exactly the bathroom is. All right. And then he gets to the requirements, and I think that's where it gets kind of more interesting. Ready? It says requirements. You must love Satan. Baphomet.
I don't think you can say that on the air.
I'm not sure who Baphomet is. Satan.
Beelzebub's brother?
Is he one of the roommates?
No, I don't think so, Kev. I think he's an associate of Satan's. I think he's like a coworker or something. And then you must also love the beast of number 666. But I think if you love Satan and Baphomet, I think it's a given that you also love the beast of number 666.
You also have to love Arthur Brown.
Who's Arthur Brown?
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
Oh.
This is his theme song.
Oh.
Remember this song?
I do kind of remember
1968.
So you must love Satan, Baphomet, and the beast of number 666. The apartment should be number 666. Wouldn't that be cool?
That'd be
a nice bonus. This is, and he's very emphatic about this, this is a satanic space. I suppose if you're into Thelema Eeyore.
Eeyore the donkey from Winnie the Pooh?
I think so. Yeah. Yes.
Are there satanic messages in Winnie the Pooh?
Well,
what's in that honey pot?
That would explain why Eeyore is always so depressed, wouldn't it? I mean, that donkey, you got to keep an eye on that donkey because, I don't know, he's always upset. But that explains why. I suppose if you're into Thelema Eeyore or some other kind of compatible occult, that you might be considered, he says. I do like those people as well, but you do need to kind of participate if all else fails. LOLZ. Laugh out loud.
What's the Z? Like laugh out loud plural?
It's like a cute way of saying laugh out loud.
Lols.
How's that fun?
I love a Satan worshiper who puts LOLZ. Doesn't that water down his Satan worshiping?
He is a Satan worshiper with a marshmallow center.
Right.
A tortured soul. Lols.
Right. Right. Whenever I envision a Satan worshiper, the last thing they would say is LOLZ. That just doesn't fit the description of your average Satan worshiper. A Baphomet worshiper, yes. Somebody who's into Baphomet. I got to look that up. I've never heard of
it. I don't even know how to spell that.
B-A-P-H-O-M-E-T. B-A-P-H-O-M-E-T. Baphomet. However, you can't be supernatural in your versions. He's very strict about that too, Wendy. Do not be supernatural in your versions.
Baphomet is an enigmatic, goat-headed figure found in several instances in the history of occultism.
Man.
Is this in Magic the Gathering?
I don't think so, is it? No.
From the Knights Templar of the Middle Ages and the Freemasons of the 19th century to modern currents of occultism, Baphomet never fails to create controversy.
But is he the one that bath mats are named after? Because I have a bath mat in the shape of a goat head. I wonder if he gets a cut of that.
It's kind of scary because Baphomet looks like he's got quite a rack.
Yeah. He's very, well, he's obviously had some work done. Imagine, like, you get the apartment and you wake up in the middle of the first night and that guy, Baphomet, is hovering over you, the goat-headed one. I'd ask for my deposit back.
All right. Aside from this, this person looking for a roommate was really high on the washer and dryer stuff. Lou knows why he went on about the washer and dryer. What's going on here, Lou?
Beelzebubians?
Yes.
They're very particular about their black robes.
Is that why?
Absolutely. And whatever outerwear that the pig wears for the ceremonies, it's got to be starched and pressed and cleaned.
Oh, they're very strict about that.
Absolutely. And, you know, he's got to make sure that the other person's helping pay for wear and tear because that pig hair gets in there.
Right. I'm sure of it.
You know, it comes off, and it's just a mess, and you can't have... let's not even get into goat head soup.
Lewis, it's not Beelzebub, it's Beelzebubbles.
And Beelzebubbles, I thought they were Beelzebubians.
All right, but don't they sacrifice the pig, or is that a different...
I don't think so. I think
it's a breeding pig, and it's more into the goats, and that's where the goat head soup comes in.
Nice Stones reference.
So,
are you into Satanism, Lou?
No.
Good.
No. My washer and dryer, you wouldn't want to come near, and it's got nothing to do with pigs or black holes.
All right. Well, thank you, Lou, for clearing that up. Very important, washer and dryer in the Satanism.
I didn't realize. All right. There's a couple more requirements. Let's take a quick break. And then if you're looking for the apartment, it's on Craigslist as of today. It's at Chicago and Western. But again, you have to love Satan and Baphomet. So come on back. We'll tell you more next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Number of the beast, Billy.
Well, yeah, there's an ad currently on Craigslist, an apartment owner who we talked about him. Boy, it was either late February or early March. He was looking for a roommate, and evidently he found one for a while on another website, but that's not working out. So once again, this guy needs a roommate. He is a Satan worshiper. He also likes Baphomet, a man we're just learning about, a guy who has a goat's head.
Which a Freemason just texted, because it was when we read about Baphomet, it said that the Freemasons use this. And Wendy, I'm a Freemason, and believe me, there is no satanic rituals in Masonry.
That didn't sound right
to
me.
It didn't.
Yeah.
And someone else has texted because there's a goat that was mentioned. As the goat says, Beelzebub. Did you text that?
That was not from me.
All right.
That was not from me. So he is listing the requirements that he asks from you. And if you're listening to this going, yeah, it sounds like a nice apartment. And he does point out that there's a new washer and dryer. He's very, very excited about all the different features of the washer and dryer.
He spent more time describing the LG washer and dryer.
Right.
Is it a top loading?
It doesn't say that. It doesn't say. He also mentions, as kind of a side note, that there is a pig also living in the house. He says in his requirements, you must, all in caps, be willing to actively help raise a pig and deal what is involved when people do so. The pig shall be treated like that of a god that must be loved and respected. That's not weird at all. Do you think it is? I don't.
No.
He then goes on to say, eventually, I may put down carpets or outright linoleum to protect the hardwood floors.
From the cloven hooves.
So why?
Yes. All right. Starting to wear out the hardwood floors. Right. So you need carpeting. Plus, it's very loud for the people below.
No, I could see that. He's a good neighbor. You know, he doesn't want to disturb the people downstairs. You must not bring illegal substances onto the premise or smoke indoors. That's
really
not happening. Zero tolerance, he says. Just tell me that you have a card, and I'll deal with that, but not indoors. A card?
For medical marijuana, probably.
Oh, all right. You must not be a vegan, he says. I like a devil worshiper that appreciates Five Guys. I like a devil worshiper who goes, you know what? We just had the Black Mass. I'm hungry. You're hungry. Let's go down to Five Guys and get ourselves a burger.
But no bacon on the burger because they idolize the pig.
Right.
See, that is why I couldn't be a Satanist.
Because
no bacon.
Right. They're very restrictive of the bacon. It says you must be okay with animals being present. I pet sit for our non-human relatives, anywhere from dogs to large birds.
Non-human relatives?
That's what he says, non-human relatives. That's his words.
He's part goat.
But Is he part goat? Well, he's not part goat, but his friend, Baphomet, is part goat. He's got the head of a goat. And then he goes on, and this one he's adamant about. Again, this is in all caps. No cats. I repeat, no cats.
They suck your soul out. That's what they're scared about.
That's not what it is. He says he has cat allergies.
Oh.
It's not. He doesn't mention any of the sucking of his soul out. He just has pet allergies.
He sounds like a really nice guy.
Sounds like a, yeah. I don't know why he's having a hard time keeping a roommate. I can't, there must be something we're not reading into this.
Is there a lot of decor red in the decorations?
It doesn't
there?
Say the color scheme at all.
Red couch, red pitchfork.
It doesn't, you would think there'd be some mention of that somewhere.
It's not really a pitchfork, by the way.
What is it?
I don't know. I was a devil one year for Halloween, and I had, it's like a three-pronged thing, I think.
Oh, right, but it's not a pitchfork.
No.
No. It's just the it's just his thing that he carries.
John has a comment. Sure. Hey, John, how's it going?
Hey, it's going great. Hey, I'm going to assume that Baphomet is not allowed anywhere near Wrigley Field, right?
No, the head of a goat, it's the curse. Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
That's later. Hysterical. Can my friend Baphomet come into the Cubs game with me? No. No. Sorry. We don't allow that kind in there.
Well, good luck. What's the guy's name?
It doesn't say his name.
I can see why.
It does not mention his name, but if you're interested in this apartment, I'm sure it's going fast. So go to Craigslist. It's located at Chicago and Western.
How much is it a month?
It's not expensive. It's $360 per month plus utilities.
That's really cheap.
I know.
Plus then, brand new washer and dryer.
Yeah, there's that. And he does
throw
out.
You get your own room.
Yeah, yeah.
And a pig. Right. Really, what more could you ask for?
What more could you ask
under
for?
Under $400 a month.
No, it's a bargain. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.